Good afternoon. Please have a seat.
Good afternoon.
We have a little
sampling here. Standing.
All right. Good afternoon. Hi there.
Yeah.
Are you Attorney Hill?
I am, yes.
Okay. And please have a seat. Yes.
And this is Dr. Spaulding.
Dr. Spaulding, yes. Yep. Please have a seat. And then we've got Attorney Voltz here on behalf of Ms. Spaulding. And we had Ms. Spaulding, and we just lost her. So we need to get...
She just got back on that one over there.
Oh, Ms. Spaulding, can you hear me? Hi there, Ms. Spaulding, can you hear me? There you go. Can we get that screen a little bit bigger?
She is unmuted.
Ms. Spaulding, can you hear me? Yes. Can you just identify yourself? You are muted. Go ahead and try that again. Can you identify yourself? No, we still can't hear you, unfortunately. Go ahead, try one more time. Can you identify yourself? Could that be Aaron? No?
No, because I have everything unmuted and she's unmuted on the WebEx too.
So, Attorney Voltz, maybe...
I'm trying to tell her that she might be muted, so...
Yeah, I think she can hear... Ms. Spaulding, might just shake your head if you can hear us. Okay, so we can't hear you. So, from our end, you are not muted. Can you see, maybe it may just be you need to get off WebEx and then try it again.
Your Honor, she has earbuds in, and I wonder if she unplugged them.
Okay.
It looks like she has earbuds.
Sometimes that's just, thank you for that, Gordon.
Without the earbuds, maybe. I don't know.
Ms. Spaulding, can you try it again? Nope. Are your earbuds, have you disconnected your earbuds?
Yeah.
Okay, you have. And let's go. No, you're still muted. Let's try to give it one more try. Can you try to identify yourself?
I could mute her video and she could stay on video. And then if she had like a phone,
a cell phone.
I could.
We could try that. It would be really nice to get her here by WebEx, though.
But she could still appear by video. You would just mute her, or I could mute her computer.
Ms. Spaulding, do you have a phone next to you, a cell phone? So we're going to call you. Yep, I see that. We're going to call you, and it'll be a California number. And when you pick up, if you could then mute yourself so you don't have any echo. We'll see if that works, okay? All right, thumbs up. All right. While we wait for Ms. Spaulding to join us, I'm just looking at your notice of appearance, Attorney Hill.
I think she just said something wrong.
Hi there, Ms. Spaulding, can you hear us?
Can you hear me, Your Honor?
Yeah, go ahead and mute yourself. Oh, try it again. Can you hear us now? We're trying to get
right here. Can you hear me? Okay, I can. Can you hear me?
We can, and the echo is gone. So that's work. Perfect. Okay. All right. So I'm Judge Schoonover. We have our two side judges here, Judges Jones and Batty. And I see, Attorney Hill, that you've entered your notice of appearance. I'm just looking at that right now. And are you here? I understand this. I'm just reading your notice of appearance. It says you initially agreed to do so out of to help them negotiate a resolution in this matter. Are you here for purposes of today's contested hearing?
Yes, I am.
Okay. All right. Okay. You indicate that you're not a family law attorney and your appearance cannot extend to representing Edward in all aspects of this litigation.
Not in all, but I think in 98%, yes.
Okay. Your intent is to remain counsel of record until a suitable trial counsel can be engaged.
Correct. And we're working on that, and I'm happy to go into why we don't have one yet or why Dr. Spalding doesn't have one yet, but yes, I am.
But today's, you don't understand, today's our day. Today's the day for a contested divorce.
The reason I entered my appearance is that statements were made to you July 10th, and I wanted to correct the record to you or expand the record to you, and there was no means to do that other than to enter my appearance and make the statements in my response. And so that's why I did it. We are trying very hard to get counsel of record. Again, we can explain why we don't. I entered my appearance here. I didn't want to mislead you. I don't believe I'm equipped to make sure. Kevin, when we talked the other day, was the first person to tell me the word nigh side. So, for example, I don't know intricacies like that are very, very important. However, I have been a litigating lawyer. I started in Vermont in 84, I litigated for the Department of Justice and have represented the United States for most of the last 40 years. I moved back to Vermont. I'm mostly retired. I run a nonprofit as well that's focused on ethics, legal ethics, and I have negotiated two matters already for Dr. Spalding. One went on for about 2 years, and I called opposing counsel, and we settled it in 2 hours, really. I think we could have done the same thing with a second piece of litigation. That's about to settle. It has, all but for one factor, which we could discuss with you today, and I am competent to present evidence on that today.
That's
a piece of litigation involving Dr. Spalding, his mother, who's in the hall and will be a witness because she has firsthand knowledge that's relevant to this as well, and some developers next to their property, and plaintiff Courtney Spalding, the defendant's wife, is also a party to the two other matters where I have represented Dr. Spalding and his mother. Let me say one more thing about that, if I may, but I want to only answer your question for now.
I see you have a motion to extend. Forgive me, I just saw, I think it was just filed just a couple of days ago. So this is the first time taking a look at it. That's your motion to extend. And I think you're prepared to proceed today, but ask that flexibility as to the three-day requirement. You're talking about submitting evidence, right?
Correct. I didn't see that notice. I did not see that order until Friday, the day that I made my motion to extend.
Okay. We'll grant that request. If we will grant the request, have you filed the exhibits you wish to file?
Yes, I have. I gave them to, I gave the bulk of them to Mr. Voles on Thursday night.
Okay.
I had an Odyssey glitch that night. They were having problem with their e-check system and my system with them, which hadn't been used in over 2 years, or maybe 1 year. We just had a glitch. We got it fixed the next business morning when their hours were open.
Okay.
And then the next morning, Friday, I emailed all of our 15 exhibits. It looks like there's 17, but there's only 15.
And we'll accommodate that and do our best to process those.
Thank you.
Okay. So we'll begin. Today is the final divorce hearing. Right. I granted the motion by Ms. Spalding to appear by WebEx, and she is here. We've got your client here. So we've got the afternoon for this divorce proceeding, so that we'll go ahead and begin. Okay. So anything other preliminary from you, Attorney Hill?
Well, I can't think of anything particularly important. Edward's mother is in the hallway. I will only have two witnesses.
Okay.
She is about 80 years old, maybe 81, 82, I'm not sure. But she traveled up from Massachusetts. So I might want to call her first, because in the event that we don't finish today, and I think there's a good chance of that, I would like to get her testimony out of the way so she doesn't have to travel twice. But that's a...
Okay, well, we can sort of get that. Let me just... Thank you. All right, so well, and if we need to take her out of order, we get close to the end, just let me know and we can do that, okay?
Thank you.
Attorney Voltz, is there anything from you?
Yes, I think that Mr. Hill might be mistaken about a couple of things. And I forwarded to Mr. Hill the email that he sent me with his exhibits. It was actually Friday evening at 9:30. The day before, I had received several unmarked exhibits, which was fine. I had no objection to them, actually. But today, as leaving the office, I saw from the court that other exhibits had been filed and accepted. So I'm seeing them right now for the first time. I don't know if they're going to be offered one by one. I usually try to stip to things for the court's sake.
Mm-hmm.
And I do see a bunch that I would stipulate to. But other than that, no, we're ready to go. We have potentially one witness, maybe for rebuttal, other than my client.
And can I ask, this is a, and I'm just going to, I always ask this, I'm just trying to narrow the issues. This is a four-year divorce, right? A four-year marriage. Let me finish my sentence.
I believe that's roughly true. I think I've heard numbers as long as five or six, but roughly correct, yes.
Yeah, in terms of, I'm looking at the date of separation versus today. So according to the complaint, they separated in March of 2024, married in August of 2020. So they've been together for 4 years. My question is this, and I think we had this discussion earlier, Attorney Volz, but is the only issue here the house?
In fact, we're stipping to that he can have the house. There's debt. My client's a student. I think she's working on her PhD. And in the course of that, she has taken out student loans, a large chunk of which was used on the household. We'll hear more testimony on that, but I think it was during a period of time when Dr. Spaulding was not working or maybe working less than he usually would. But my client can clarify that.
So she's agreeable to give him the house, but she's asking that he take a portion of her student loan debt.
And then there's the dog.
The dog.
You'll hear testimony about the dog. And we have a proposal, of course, and that'll be my first exhibit, and the court will be able to see exactly what it is she's looking for.
Okay.
But essentially, that's it. She's relinquishing any claim to the home. I think Dr. Spaulding not only had it purchased beforehand, but maybe even paid for completely,
mm-hmm.
and she claims no major contributions to it, so she's...
Well, so she's not asking for any equity in the home?
No.
So it's just a question of really debt.
Yes.
That's really the only issue is debt.
Yes.
So the reason I ask that is we're going to finish this today. I can't imagine having more than a half day hearing on that limited issue if that's truly... really the only thing we're arguing about. Okay, so let's go ahead and do you have anything further from you, Attorney Hill?
No, nothing for, oh, sorry.
Okay, nothing to Attorney, yeah, anything further from you?
I agree. I think there are two issues. Debt is, what I would say is, it's cost. It's, I mean, cost, it already, there's a good amount of money that's already been spent on marital matters, such as these two lawsuits where they were both defendants. And also, yeah, debt has been incurred related to that and other matters. But, yes, as Kevin and I discussed first time we talked, which was around July 8th or July 9th, I see this as only money, debts and such, and only the dog, which I think we've got a proposal for resolving that as well. We have a proposal and have made a proposal for resolving all.
All right. So dog and debt. Okay. Here we go. So let's go ahead and start.
Right. I swear this witness in.
Excuse me? Yes, we can. Actually, we'll just swear both of them in. Ms. Spaulding will swear you in, and Dr. Spaulding will swear you in. So you both need to stand up.
And we
can. Ma'am, could you please raise your right hand if you can hear me? Do you affirm that the evidence you shall give relative to the cause now under consideration shall be the whole truth and nothing but the truth under the pains and penalties of perjury?
Ma'am?
Ms. Spaulding, we can't hear you. Go ahead.
I do.
Okay.
I swear.
Maybe see.
And
she can remain seated, of course.
Okay.
She, yeah.
Yeah, remain seated. Will we be putting her on a larger screen, or?
Can we get her bigger?
I can't because of good speaker tracks and because she's speaking through her.
Any objection?
Like
813.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's a whole new system.
I just logged on to WebEx and looked at my screen, so I can just see her.
Is it the same?
Okay.
I don't know if that, if you guys want to.
Yeah, I have no question. You'll have no problem.
All right. Unfortunately, that's the size she's going to remain, but we can try to, so what the court will do is I'm going to actually try that, see if that works.
You can't pin her.
There we go.
We have no objection to her filing charges, but there's
yeah.
Right.
We have a new system, folks, so that's what we're trying to figure out.
In fact, there's a lot more information.
I'll see if I can find it.
We already agreed it.
I can proceed like this, Judge. I'm fine.
We can go ahead and proceed. Okay. Yeah.
So, Courtney, you can hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Oh, perfect. We hear you well. And you can see me okay?
Yes, I can.
Okay. I'd like you to have in front of you exhibits 1, 12, and 13. Those will be what we're referring to. Tell me when you have those in front. Our exhibits 1.
Can you say that one more?
Our exhibits 1, 12, and 13. We'll start with exhibit 12, your financial affidavit. Tell me when you're ready. Okay. First of all, if you would state your name and address for the record. Oh, and if your address is confidential, I'll explain that to the court. I don't hear it.
Okay. Courtney Spaulding.
Okay.
I'm living in Brandon, Vermont.
And Judge, for reasons?
That's fine. She does not have to disclose her address.
Thank you. And what do you do? What is your livelihood or your vocation?
I'm a PhD student full-time, and I work as a therapist, unlicensed. I believe the technical term is non-licensed but rostered therapist under supervision.
Okay. And when do you anticipate completing your studies?
August 2026.
Okay, so just a little over a year from now. And you are married to Dr.
Yes.
Spaulding?
You need to say yes or no, ma'am.
Yeah. And you'll have to speak up and say something for the record. You have to have an answer. You are married to Dr. Spaulding?
Yes.
And what was the date of marriage?
Yes. August 15th, 2020.
And did there come a time when you separated?
Yes.
And do you remember that date?
September 25th, 2024.
And have you lived separate apart for 6 consecutive months or more?
Yes.
And have you resided in Vermont for at least a year?
Yes.
And are there any children of the marriage?
No.
And is it reasonably probable that you will resume marital relations with Dr. Spaulding?
No.
And do you remember the NICE period, which would postpone the date of divorce if there was a reason to?
Okay.
And as I understand it, did you want to waive that NICE period?
Yes.
Meaning you would like to have the divorce pronounced as soon as the court's able?
Yes.
And did you want the right but not the obligation to resume a former name?
Yes.
And what is that complete name, please?
Courtney Lee Stearns.
And is it in our property proposal? In the end?
Yes.
Okay. And what is the name?
I'm sorry, can you say that again?
What is your middle name? That wasn't too clear on this end.
Lee, L-E-E.
Thank you. And you're not living together, as you mentioned. When it came to running the household, how were the duties divided between the two of you? Was there any kind of routine that the marriage settled into in that regard?
It was difficult to have a routine, but in general, it involved me waking up early, taking out the dog quickly and quietly so that it did not wake up the defendant, beginning goat chores, washing the dishes, making sure that all the animals were cared for. The rest of the day kind of varied for me. I spent it between classes, making sure food was being made for people, and making sure everyone ate, making sure everyone had their needs met, and I was also, like I said, classes and working, clients kind of scheduled as they could, And then there would be papers. I would be assisting Ed with whatever papers he needed to have written as best I could in that day. Then there was more farm chores. Of course, the dog needed to go out multiple times. I would take the dog out in between clients. And then at the end of the day, there would be dinner. And then often some sort of TV time. And then try to get to bed at some point, depending on what still needed to be done. More papers. It was grab. School life is a little hectic, so exact schedules are hard.
And you mentioned a couple of things I want to follow up on. One was animals. You and Dr. Spalding had a farm?
I had a farm, yeah.
You had a farm. Okay, and what was the name of the farm?
Northland Farm.
What's it called?
Northland, N-O-R-T-H-L-A-N-D.
Very well.
Farm.
And did there come a time, and the paperwork that was filed with the state, Secretary of State, reflected it was in your name only?
Yes.
And did there come a time Did there come a time when Dr. Spalding's name was added to it?
Yes.
And when was that?
October 2024.
And what were the circumstances? October of 24?
Yes, October 25th, 2024, yes.
And this is something the two of you discussed?
No.
What were the circumstances of that then, briefly?
We were living apart and separate for a month. I'm unsure why the change of ownership of the farm.
You didn't consent to it?
No. There was no contact with the defendant at that time.
Okay, and so how did you become aware that he was now a part owner, at least under the law?
He began asserting that he was the part owner, and I looked it up in the business records and found the date of change.
And what had happened?
As the registered agent of the business, Edward had gone in and added himself as an owner of the business after our separation.
And ultimately, does it matter? Are you willing?
Did you ask me if it matters?
Are you letting him have the farm?
I am.
Okay. You mentioned a dog. Is this Hazel that we've heard so much about?
Yes.
And there's a dispute between the two of you who should get Hazel. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right, and we'll circle back to that when we get to your property proposal. How were, describe, one of the things you're asking the court to do is apportion some debt between the two of you. Why do you feel that Dr. Spalding should contribute to some of the debt that you incurred on behalf of the household?
There was a portion of time when the defendant was underemployed. I can't speak to his capability to work more, but he was not bringing in any income.
When was this?
This was 2020, around 2022. He finished his doctoral program and was no longer getting money to live off of for himself. And so we were living off of my student loans and my part-time income as a pre-licensed therapist. And there was a portion of that fund that was during that time with some issues with bills, the water system, legal battles, and I contributed my student loan money to that in hopes to get it back at some point. Additionally, I paid for housing expenses, property taxes during that time because I was the only one making significant enough money and had access to the student loans.
And prior to that, the point in time when the household relied just on those funds, was there a time when Dr. Spalding was contributing more than that time?
There have been times where Dr. Spalding contributed more financially than at that point in time, yes.
So to be fair, prior to the point in time which you feel that he owes contribution, did he ever offset that by having more contribution on his part than you did.
I do not believe so.
I would like you to share with the court what your relationship became that led to a divorce. Just briefly, if you would, describe what your relationship was like with Dr. Spaulding that led you to this point.
So originally what I thought was a good relationship as a very young woman. It seemed supportive. I was going through a rough time when I met the defendant. He was, he had all the classes for his doctoral program. I believed that he was a good and safe person to be around. It was, it felt really helpful during that time that I was going through and really trying to get out there. I ended up throughout the relationship, and it didn't take very long. It was within a couple of years that it started to show, especially looking back now and seeing it more clearly. I think that everyone is aware when you're in a situation it is harder to see than when you had some time to come out and reflect. But there was definitely elements where the power dynamic was imbalanced.
And how would
the relationship went on?
How would that
would manifest in management of finances. I had very little input in that. I had no access to any financial accounts, any accounts that essentially all purchases were run through credit cards in Ed's name, and he would get text messages to his phone so he knew where I was spending and how much. He would review the phone records. My phone was put in his name, and he would review who I called and ask me who I talked to for how long. At certain times when he was unsure, my paychecks were signed over to him, and I found out later that they were actually being put in his personal account instead of our mutual account, and they had been doing that for about 2 years.
To the tune of how much money?
I mean, it was part-time income, so probably $20,000 to $30,000 a year.
And did he in turn use that money for household bills or something for himself personally? Or did he save it? What did he buy with the money?
I assume I had no access. I don't know where the money went.
And if
I assume it was spent on house.
If you didn't comply with these restrictions, were there consequences? What were those consequences?
If I did not comply with what was requested, guilt, blame, and shame were used. That was often the first step. If that did not get the response required, there was often a very long lecture with circular reasoning that was meant to exhaust. There was isolation in the home where one time we went up to a week without speaking, where if I was in the same room as him, he growled at me, and if I stayed in the room, he would leave and slam the door. There have been were times when I refused to help him with legal paperwork, and he wouldn't do it on his own, so he would throw things in the bedroom.
He would what? I'm sorry.
There were times I did.
I'm sorry. One moment. Can we turn him up a little bit, just the volume?
Court has a question. He would what? Did you say he would throw things?
Yes, he would throw things. One time it was an end table with papers on it. They were often left that way, and I would have to go through and pick it up. Then I would be chastised for the papers not being in a findable spot. There were other times when I did leave him when I was working with clients, and he would yell very loud swears and slam the door very hard, and my dog and I would lock the door of the office, and my dog would hide under the desk, and we would wait for him to calm down before we would leave my office. Often I'd have to mute myself.
Sorry, let me interject. Is this the same dog, Hazel?
This is Hazel.
And when you said he would throw things, were things thrown in your direction?
Generally, no. On the date of separation, he did throw a couple's therapy book in my direction.
And I may have interrupted you. Was there something more you wanted to add to that?
If I was not able to accomplish all that needed to be accomplished in a day, both my things, work things, and assisting Ed with what was required, I would often not be able to go to sleep, and I would have to stay up and help, however long that took. There were times I would have to write my own paper between midnight and 3 in the morning to try to get everything done that needed to be done in a day. And if he got stressed in the middle of the night, I would wake up to him being angry and would need to assist or deal with whatever the emotional issue was so that maybe we could go back to sleep.
And when you say assist, you mean talk him through it, or what does that mean?
Sometimes talk him through it, sometimes turn on the light and start working on whatever was on his mind so that he could go back to sleep. Sometimes he was just, there was no fixing it, and I would wait and either try to go back to sleep or hope he could work through it and just kind of sit and wait and see if he wanted to talk it out.
And you mentioned that you would have to help him write papers. What kind of papers would you help him write?
All of them.
Like in what subject category? We don't know.
I would assist with any sort of, if he needed an email proofread, I would proofread it. If he needed some of his PhD dissertation edited, I would assist with that. I would be his scribe, but see, he would talk, and I would sit and type for him for legal paperwork. I was told it was absolutely necessary or he wouldn't be able to do it. And if I didn't do it, then I'd need to find somewhere to live, and it was my fault.
And did you say at times threats were made?
Yes.
What type of threats?
Yes. My job or housing were the things that were threats. And often reminders that I couldn't possibly live on my own.
Did he ever threaten? Were you ever threatened, or did he ever injure himself?
He threatened a hunger strike at one time in response to one of the other legal battles. He often threatened that he was going to stop taking care of himself and lay down and just die, so I should move on and find something else to do and move on with my life.
Were you able to have a social life? Could you go visit people, visit family members, and so forth?
If I did, there was often a list of things that needed to be done beforehand, so I would need to shovel the driveway or mow the lawn or make sure all tasks could be accomplished. There was one time I was supposed to be going to visit my dying grandmother, and I was unaware of the list of things that needed to be accomplished before I left, and I was late to visit her, and that's normally when she falls asleep because we had to clean out my car. And so I could go. Often Ed would go with me, but it was often a really difficult to leave. It was very difficult. When on the way home, there was often a lot of placating that he said the right thing or he did the right thing, and it would be the entire hour drive home. It was a lot. And if I didn't bring him, I often got barraged with text messages about how I left him alone to do things on his own without assistance, and he would get angry. So it was honestly easier to bring him.
Tell us about each of your relationships with Hazel. How was Hazel acquired? In whose name? Who brought the vet visits? Who trained Hazel? What was Hazel's purpose in the household?
So Hazel was purchased after the death of the previous dog that was Ed's. I had asked repeatedly to be able to purchase Hazel because she was from his aunt's litter of English Shepherds. And after the previous dog, Ella, passed away, I asked again if we could get Hazel. I was told, yes, I coordinated with Ed's aunt to purchase Hazel. I coordinated transportation from Maryland to Vermont. I researched the pedigree. I researched the breed. I listened to podcasts on it. I spoke to some breeders. I worked really hard because I was planning to use Hazel on the goat farm to help me with chores. Not only would she, the breed is made to assist with small farmers, and that's pretty much their sole purpose. So her job was to help me move goats back and forth because we didn't have a chute system, so they kind of free roamed in a fenced in area. She would help me channel them, and I trained her on a long line, not perfectly, but she got the job done, and she would also guard the gate so I could come in and out without getting mauled by a herd of 20 goats. Hazel spent a lot of time with me. I did. She was in my office every day at work. When I was working from home, she was sitting with me in my office. I took her out. I did the potty training. I fed her. I made sure that we had dog food. I took her to do public access training. She did not like it, so we stopped. She has never liked going to Tractor Supply to help me get grain. I took her to her vet appointments. I managed her veterinary care. She is purchased in both of our names, but she is registered in just my name.
Okay. And you had mentioned that in the morning you would let Hazel out and you'd be careful not to wake Dr. Spaulding up. What would occur if he was woken up?
He would be angry, and there would be constant reminders that I woke him up, and it would throw off his day. There was a rules 1 through 5, let Ed sleep, was the direct quote for the entire years we were together.
Did you have a credit card?
I had a credit card in Ed's name, yes. My name was on the card, but it was run through Ed's account.
And were your purchases confidential?
No.
How so?
The messages would pop up on Ed's phone, what I spent, the amount, and where, every single time I used the card.
And what would happen as a result of that? Did conversations ensue about any purchases?
Yes.
For example?
Often complaints that I spent money at somewhere. Normally it was farm-related and animals needed things when I was purchasing anything. It was normally animal-related.
Okay. And as, just backtracking a little bit, I don't think I established it, but it was a goat farm that you had?
Yes.
Okay. What's the goat farm? What?
I asked her what kind of farm it was.
It was a goat farm. Okay.
And as far as phone calls, were you able to speak to people confidentially?
I believe so until closer to the end of the relationship when I started getting questioned about who I was talking to and why would I talk to somebody for that long.
And how would he know who you'd be talking to?
The phone was run through his account and he was checking the call logs.
Did you have other dogs together?
He did. Ed had a dog when I met him, Ella, a corgi. I had 3 dogs when I moved in. I had a corgi that I was told couldn't stay because of he would get into things, and Ed said, I can't have that in my house. So I had to give that dog to my sister to stay with Ed. I had a rescue boxer mix, and she was an issue with traffic, and there was no fence at that time. I hadn't put in the fence in the backyard, so there was concern that she'd get hit by a car. So she was given to my first husband, and the third dog was a dog that I rescued off the side of the road in college and she was very special, but Ed was allergic to her. And so I made the decision that, it was told to me that he couldn't, the health issues that were coming from this dog, he couldn't sustain. So I had to make a choice. I rehomed the dog to a family friend. Later, I got a poodle. Ed helped me purchase the poodle. He went in half. The poodle ate the linoleum floor as a puppy, and he told me that every time he looked at her, it made him angry because of what she did to the floor and that I hadn't repaired it yet. I don't know how to repair linoleum. And so I became so anxious anytime the poodle would step out of line that I ended up rehoming the poodle with one of Ed's friends. And then we got livestock guardian dogs for the goats. And one of them was a rescue who was afraid of men. And Ed said she made him very uncomfortable. So I think they both made each other very uncomfortable. And so it ended up being in her best interest to send her back. Ed said he would no longer go in his backyard if she was still there. So she was sent back to the breeder that she came from. And then Hazel came after Ella, the original corgi who stayed through all of this. There was Ed's dog. Hazel came after all of those.
Were you surprised that Dr. Spaulding was interested in having Hazel? Having Hazel be a ward?
Very.
Specifically?
Very, yes.
Who was Jessica and her baby?
Oh, my friend Jessica. That is my childhood best friend.
Okay.
That was a event to Jessica's. She was induced to have her first baby. I bred and raised goats. She felt comfortable being in the birthing room with her because of my experience with birth. And she was very nervous about this. And I went down when she got induced, and my plan was to stay through the birth of the baby. Meanwhile, we were in the middle of no water to the residents, the Spaulding residents, and so we were supposed to be doing a farm project to run electrical lines to the goats. I believed that Ed could either handle it or it could be tabled because the birth of the child could not be. And I was waiting with Jessica. She was induced. We were waiting for labor to start. I was there approximately 24 hours in Boston when Ed started having what can only be described as a meltdown. There was a lot of yelling, swearing, saying, I left him alone. It's my goat farm. It's my problem. I left him to do my work. There were threats that I should find a new job. There were threats that I should find a new house. The locks were going to be changed. And then he hung up and became unreachable. And at that point, I called his mother and said, I don't know if he's okay. He is, we already knew he had high blood pressure. I'm kind of worried about him. This is a huge reaction. I'm worried I'm going to be homeless. I don't know what to do. I can't get a hold of him anymore. And ultimately, the decision was made at 2:00 in the morning while my friend was in labor for me to drive back to Vermont to manage whatever was going on there. And I did. And I missed the birth of her baby.
You mentioned, I think, at one point that he was your boss. When was he your boss?
He became my boss as an intern at his nonprofit, and I had an external supervisor, so it followed the codes that were required, but I was working for his nonprofit, North End Adventure.
And this was when?
This was from 2020 to the October 2024. I believe the first or second week of October when I was demanded after we separated that I resign from the board, which I had a seat that did nothing, and I quit. And so I was demanded to leave, so I did, and started my own practice.
And were you working for him when he proposed to you?
I was working for him at one point before 2020, and I'm trying to remember the overlap I believe at that point in 2020, I was either working for him as a direct care for a person with disabilities, or I was unemployed because my employment elsewhere was inconvenient, because there was a period where I was milking cows and I would get up at 4:30 in the morning and that interrupted his sleep. So he has been my boss multiple times, off and on. I believe he either, I can't remember exactly what my job was, in he proposed in August of 2019. I believe I was working a direct care job at that time. I believe.
Now, the court has been made aware, I think, through part of your testimony and some of the pleadings, about other lawsuits that Dr. Spaulding's involved in. Could you give the court a quick rundown of the lawsuits that you know of in total while you knew Dr. Spaulding, and how many are still active right now that directly or indirectly have impacted you?
Either in total of what I've heard of him or just what I've seen?
So from your understanding of Dr. Spaulding's legal proceedings, through your conversations with him and things that you've seen with direct knowledge, are you aware of any lawsuits? Let's put it that way.
Yes, I'm aware of the Shea development lawsuit. I'm aware of the Town of Wakefield zoning lawsuit. I'm aware of a lawsuit between him and a former employee about a lawnmower, which then extended into First Student Transportation. Those were the ones that I was personally aware of.
And of those, are any still active right now, or any ongoing?
The Shea development one, I believe, is the only one still ongoing, and that one's been going on since 2022.
And what is the issue there?
Originally, the Shays damaged the water line. There was questions over easement. It's been back and forth quite a bit. And currently the Shays are the exact term, redoing ed for damages from the repair, I believe.
And are you a named party?
I am.
And what is your involvement in it, and what are you asking the court to do in that connection?
I don't own the house. I never have. I have never been allowed to make decisions about or for the house. Even if I had any opinion that would get us away from the lawsuit or resolve it, it wouldn't have mattered. I would have gotten yelled at anyway for not being on the right team. So I have zero ability to control the outcome of that lawsuit, and I always have.
And are you asking the court, insofar, in so much as it can do, to indemnify you and hold you harmless in connection with that?
I am. There is a settlement agreement that is going around at this moment that I have reviewed and signed myself. That would do so, because I have not had any ability to have power over the issue.
And is that the only lawsuit that you're involved in that's active at the moment?
That is the only one that is active at the moment. I was excused from the Town of Wakefield.
Okay. One moment, if you would. How are relations between Dr. Spaulding and your family?
Not good. not good. From the very beginning, my mother voiced that she did not appreciate the treatment.
Let me just stop you there, because we don't want to say what she said, because that would be hearsay.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's fine. So, would you go to family gatherings together, or, like, how was he received into the family? Or how did he receive your family?
Not well. There was a lot of criticism from both sides.
Okay. And how about you with Dr. Spaulding's family?
Everything seemed okay when I integrated into the Spaulding family. His mother called me baby doll for a while. There was often when we went to family gatherings, I remember when we went to Thanksgiving at Annette and Robert Spaulding's house, Ed went to bed early, and I remember his entire family had was all up the upstairs talking to me, and they said, "We don't know how you put up with him." And
again,
I stood up for him.
We don't want to say what they said, but did you have cordial relations? I'm sorry, we're talking over each other. Did you have cordial relations with them?
Your Honor, objection,
yeah.
or more of a comment than an objection. Could I be heard?
Yeah, go ahead.
I think, you, as you noted, Kevin, you were getting a little bit into some hearsay.
Well, hold on, what's your objection?
Well, it's extracting hearsay, and I was more of a comment. I'm okay with it to a limited degree. We will, of course, want to, for example, Dr. Spaulding's mother has had conversations with the plaintiff's mother and could perhaps explain why or put some more context to what a plaintiff has just said of the mother criticizing Ed.
I'm not going to include that testimony. That was hearsay. So
we'll strike it all.
Yeah, that's stricken.
Okay, thank you. Then I have nothing further.
Okay.
Did you have reliable transportation?
No.
What? Why not?
I had the car with more issues. We drove my car more. My car had a battery issue that became, I was told by, it was called a vampire issue. And so the back window stopped working. It stopped starting. The battery had to be jumped every time you needed to turn it on. For a while, if you turned it on every day, it would still work, but then it stopped. So then it got to the point where if you drove and then stopped for gas, you'd have to jump your car again. And it was deemed that we needed to wait it out until we could get the money to fix it. And so, no, I did not.
And could you visit your friends readily?
No, the Jessica instance was the last time I was invited to see friends.
And did Dr. Spaulding encourage you to go with your friends?
No.
Did he discourage you?
I was told often, I had a friend named Joy, who was a goat friend. I would often visit her for a while, but it got to the point where Ed told me she was not a good friend, and it resulted in a very long, very late night conversation in tears where I was made to believe that this woman was not healthy for our relationship between the relationship between Ed and myself. Joy and I have since reconnected, so I've been able to try to repair that.
And Courtney, do you feel comfortable talking about the nudes and the bras and so forth?
Yes.
Please tell the court briefly what that was about.
There was a friend of Ed's while we were married. I was told that this woman was just sexual in nature. It's just who she was. When I expressed concern that she was crossing some relationship boundaries, mostly, I believe, a virtual infidelity, at least emotional affair by definition, where there was one night that I found him texting her at 2 or 3 in the morning, and I expressed a lot of concern that that was occurring because I was asleep and woke up and he was on his phone messaging this woman who had historically sent him nudes that I knew of, and I was told by him that they are her version of art and that it is
his
care.
I'm sorry, Ms. Baldwin. When we have an objection, we just have to stop for just a moment. Go ahead, Attorney Hill.
We've not seen any of this in exhibits, I don't believe. This is the equivalent of hearsay. This is the first I'm hearing of this. So to hear testimony from her about what someone has sent to Ed and documents we've not seen, particularly if they're alleged to be nude photographs, that to me seems objectionable as hearsay.
Okay, I'm going to overrule that.
How did you see these photos?
I have never seen the photos, but what did happen was a discussion about relationship boundaries that resulted in me being told that I was wrong because I said maybe we needed to discuss how our relationship boundaries were and that maybe how we need to have set them with other people, because that felt really inappropriate to me to hear that this was occurring.
And this was
because it was told to me. I know.
This was a discussion with whom?
Discussion with Ed about our relationship boundaries and how we would handle friends who crossed them, and maybe the things that we could say to assert the boundaries. Not that we needed to end the friendship, but that we needed to say, hey, that's really not something that I would like to receive. It ended up being an argument in the middle of the night that night, there was no sleep. Then Ed missed the work meeting that day. I got blamed for keeping him awake. I got blamed for him missing the work meeting, all because I woke up to him texting somebody else and decided to discuss that this feels wildly inappropriate. And then following that, to save his job, it was forced that I write a letter to his job saying that it was my fault. And I remember doing so in tears because I was told it was my fault. He was going to lose his job. I would have to move out, the normal threats. So I wrote the letter to his job that has been submitted after all of this occurred the night before.
Okay. And you had mentioned nudes. How did you become aware of the nudes?
Ed told me he had received them.
Thank you. Is there anything else in this vein that you wanted to share with the court that I've not brought before the court already?
I believe you mentioned the bras. The bras was when he criticized the type of bra that I used based on research and his belief of what is healthy for breast tissue, and or switched to bras so that it was no longer a conversation. And then upon switching the bras, he told my mother at a public event in front of her friends with me standing there about my bras and how he fixed them and how they look nice now.
Thank you. Anything else?
I believe those were the two things you mentioned.
Okay. Your Honor, if I may, I think Attorney Hill has stipulated to the admission of Exhibits 12 and 13 and 1. Those are respectively 813A, 813B, and our proposal, but I want to make sure that that's still the case if Attorney Hill has had a chance to review them. These are things we have said.
I think, I've been looking for those. I don't see your 813AB or proposal, and Exhibit 12 looks like it's an email.
So I
must be looking at the wrong thing.
We had submitted ours.
I do see them. Yep. Okay.
And these
so
are
this
ones
is the one submitted on July 15th. There is Exhibit 12. Yep, plaintiff's 813A, and 13 is 813B. Any objection, Mr. Hill, to the admissibility?
I've not had a chance to go over these two documents, A or B, with my client. I did look at the other document that Kevin referenced, and that was the proposed final stipulation. At least if this is in the same form, and Kevin tells me that it is, that we discussed a couple of weeks ago, then I don't have any objection to their Exhibit 1, their final stipulation. As to, I mean, we're not obviously agreeing to all of its terms, but we certainly agree that that is their final stipulation.
Yes. Same with the 813
okay. A and B. Well, I don't deny that that is your A and is your B. I've not had a chance to talk to Dr. Spaulding about the truth of the statements in it.
Well, I'm assuming these have been submitted throughout the case. I mean, these 813 A's and B's, I understand you're submitting them as an exhibit, but I'm just assuming the 813 A and B was probably submitted once the divorce was.
It had been as well, but I made sure that my client went through it, updated it on the date that's entered here. July 9th.
Okay.
Not much to these things, but again, we understand that Attorney Hill was not agreeing with what's in it.
But no, I mean the 813 A and B are certainly relevant, so I'm going to admit them, and you can certainly cross-examine on them, which is certainly routine. If you need a moment just to go through them with your client, I'll give you that moment if you need that.
Well, it might be good. I would, and I might suggest that perhaps we take a break because I want to confer with my client regarding some of the new things we've heard today. Or this new to me.
But we'll take a break before. Let's go ahead and finish her direct.
Certainly, yes.
And then we'll go from there. Okay, sure. Well, if you need a break, we'll let you have a break.
Thank you. So, Courtney, I'd like you to look at Exhibit 12, that's your 813A. It's true and accurate to the best of your knowledge, of course.
Yes.
Okay. And your income is indicated on page 2. That's from your employment of $3,061.
Yes.
Okay. And I'm just going to try to go through these quickly. So if you can follow along. Page 3 has nothing pertinent. You receive Medicare, but that's irrelevant. There's no children of the relationship. So now I'm looking at page 6. It's the first page where any debts are indicated. And we see at the very top your student loans, $404,000. And change, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, what's the $3,000 loan to Symphony Bank or Synchrony, whatever it is?
That is post-separation. I purchased a lawnmower.
Oh, okay. And are you looking for contribution from Dr. Spaulding for that?
No.
Just the student loans, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And you will be responsible for your own Discover card?
Yes.
Did you need contribution from him for that?
No.
Okay. And then down below, veterinary bills, you're making a $100 a month payment there. Are you looking for any contribution there?
No.
And then,
not as long as Hazel remains in my care.
And then, really, that's it. I think what the court will want to know, well, let's look at your 813B now, real quick. That's Exhibit 13. Got that in front of you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, make sure you say yes or no out loud. It's for the recording.
Yeah.
Now, I notice on the bottom of page 2, where it says, well, is there a transfer or sale of assets during the last 12 months? And what do you have there, Courtney?
I sold the goats.
Okay, tell us more. How much?
I sold the goats for $5,500. I was told to leave with the goats or pay rent. I was told to leave with the animals or pay rent. I left with the goats.
You were told to what? Sell the animals or pay rent?
So you have to pause it. Stop. The court has a question.
I'm sorry. You speak so fast. I didn't quite catch that. I was told to something or something.
So you were told to sell the goats or?
I was told to sell the animals or pay rent to stay on November 25th, 2024. September 25th, 2024.
And who told you that?
And Ed.
Okay. All right.
I left with the goats, all stayed with Ed. I had very limited ability to keep a herd of, I believe, upwards of 15 goats at that time contained. I did the best that I could for a couple weeks when it looked like this was I was not able to go back to get any equipment, to get their medical care, to get, I have to repurchase everything. It was made that it was in the best interest of the goats that they go somewhere that had the facility set up for them.
Okay.
So,
yep. And if it wasn't abundantly clear, you left the marital home and Dr. Spaulding stayed there.
Correct.
Okay. And what happened with the proceeds from the goats?
I had them.
I'm sorry, what happened?
What happened to the proceeds?
I used them. And I have them.
Oh, you have the money? See, what I'm asking you is, you sold them for $5,500. What happened to the $5,500?
I put it into purchasing furniture because I had none.
Okay. And then you also withdrew money from your student loans that were in the joint account, and you put it in your own account?
Correct.
Good. And we see on the next page the value of the home. You're not looking for the home, are you, or anything from the home, other than personal belongings?
No.
Yep. Okay.
And other than personal.
Do you have a vehicle?
Yes.
And what is your vehicle?
A 2015 Honda CRV.
And that one is worth how much?
I believe approximately $10,000. I'm having to find it.
Okay, so look on page 5. We don't actually see the cars identified. Which one is the Honda?
I'm having trouble finding my 813s because I don't... I had them, I lost them. Okay, the car. Here we go. I found the tab.
Yep.
On page 5?
Correct, at the top.
It is both parties car number 2, 2015 Honda CRV.
And are you asking the court to award it to you?
I am.
Can you ask the court to award Dr. Spaulding's car to him?
Correct.
Did either of you contribute to the purchase price of the other's car?
Ed was required as a co-signer on my car after a car accident. But no, I paid for my car. He paid for his car.
Are you asking that each of you be awarded your businesses slash practice?
Yes.
Okay, and we'll go into what those are with your property proposals. Are you asking the court to award each of you any accounts that are in your names separately?
I'm asking the court to award the bank accounts in my name only to me, any mutual accounts Ed can have.
And he can have the balance that's in them?
Yes.
Do either of you have any retirement accounts of significance?
I do. I believe Ed does also, but I know that I do.
And how much is yours?
$35.
Okay. And you're asking to be awarded that?
Yes.
And if he has a retirement account, he can have his?
Yeah.
Okay. Now let's turn our attention to Exhibit 1 as we finish up here. Tell me when you have that in front of you, your property proposal.
Okay, I do.
So now, under vehicles, he has co-signed to yours, you said. Is that correct?
Correct.
Is there any plan to get his name off of yours?
My hope is yes.
How?
I don't know.
And so do you know when you're going to be able to do that?
my hope is as soon as possible. The car is entirely unreliable.
Okay, and how
it
much...
It doesn't have AC.
So I'm a little confused by that. Forgive me. I'm looking at the 2015 Honda CR Vermont Touring Black. Ms. Spalding, that's your car? And is the title in his name, in your name, or is the loan in both of your names?
It is paid off. The title is in both of our names, Your Honor.
Okay, so you just need him to transfer title to you. But there's no loan on the, is that yes?
Your Honor.
Okay, and there's no loan in both of your names?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Perfect. And so you would like to have the court order that be done within a reasonable time as the court sees fit, correct?
Correct.
All right, let's turn to the next page. As far as personal property, is this adequately describe what you want the court to do as far as what you want to have awarded to you for personal property and what you want to have the court award to Dr. Spalding?
Yes, I would like my childhood stuffed animals, clothes, college memorabilia, any sports equipment that I had, skis I'm thinking of are in there, Hazel the dog, any personal documents for my college program that are saved on the computers in the defendant's possession, and then the defendant would get all the farm equipment that's currently there, the farm business and farm name. He can keep the engagement and wedding rings, the soap business and the equipment associated with that, the nonprofit and any associated equipment with that, the house, furniture. He can have those items.
And on page 2 at the top where you list those things, you also give a value estimated at $34,000 and change for the equipment and the business and the name. How did you arrive at that figure?
That is the value that was arrived at by both Ed and myself when we were applying for farm loans. So we totaled up the value of all of the farm assets to list. That includes tractor, that includes fencing, that includes shelters, water buckets, goat medications, milking equipment. There's a number of things that go into that. Okay. Trailers.
And that you did that exercise with Dr. Spalding approximately when?
It started in 2020 when we started the farm, and we continued editing and updating throughout the entire ownership of the farm. I had his assistance because he was the one who was in charge of purchasing big purchases and keeping track of the finances. So I had him assist in totaling that number up.
And whatever it comes to, you're saying he can have it?
Yep.
Okay. And then, of course, you want to be awarded your practice. And then for Dr. Spalding, that is for Dr. Spalding. Oh, that you want to have the items mailed or shipped to you as described. Is that correct?
Correct.
And you're just trusting that he'll do this?
It's not ideal, but he has stated that he does not want me on the property ever again or my family, and I am not able to be in his presence without fear. So this may be the best option.
On page 3, you describe what would happen to specific accounts consistent with your prior testimony. Each get your own accounts. Any joint accounts he can have.
Correct.
And he gets the house.
Correct.
And you're not on any documentation, so there's nothing that has to be transferred.
Correct.
And now on page 5, we look at section 8, division of debt you describe here, which debt each of you would be awarded. Is that correct?
Correct.
And that you want to be able to keep the proceeds of the goat sale free and clear.
Correct.
Well, let's just be clear. This is page five. There are no proceeds because you spent it, right?
I think so.
Yeah. So, you had to shake it. You had to say yes or no. I'm sorry.
Correct.
Yeah.
We can't hear your head rattle.
Correct, Your Honor.
How did you arrive at the figure for Dr. Spaulding's contribution to student loan living expenses?
That is the amount that was disbursed for living expenses for the college. For the time when Ed was not receiving a paycheck or receiving his own student loan living expenses. So based on the amount of money that was put into the water system, the attorneys, that often came from this number. Also, I was working part-time, a number that I have been able to maintain and survive on my own, so I think it's reasonable to deduce that my living expenses were covered by my job. Thus, this money being spent went into the home. It went into Ed's living expenses.
Okay. And are you, does this presuppose that you have paid a comparable amount towards living expenses?
I was working throughout, which was being deposited into Ed's personal bank account. So I'm assuming that I made a reasonable contribution, considering I made between $20,000 and $40,000 a year.
And that all went into the household?
I'm not sure where it went. I had no access to the finances. It went into Ed's personal account.
Okay. And that this is over what period of time? And forgive me if you've already said that. This debt was incurred.
It was from the period of time he stopped his program, which was, I believe, 2022 until the date of separation, when I was no longer paying for Ed's living expenses.
And there's a tax debt, I see.
Yes.
And you're willing to split that?
Yes.
But whose name is that tax debt?
Mine.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. No spousal support sought from our side?
No. No, I don't want spousal support.
And you want the right but not the obligation to resume the name Courtney Lee Stern, as indicated, correct?
Correct. Correct. Okay.
And then there's one last thing on the last page. As far as the allocation of the businesses and the practices, you want it to be free and clear of any interest of the other, and that each of you would indemnify and hold harmless the other for any liabilities connected with those. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Courtney, I think that's everything I wanted to show, but if the court can give me just a moment to look through.
Yep.
And you'll be thinking if there's anything else that we need to tell the court. The only thing that's left are exhibits that have text messages, and I think you've adequately testified to everything. Are you okay with that?
Yes.
Judge, I have nothing further.
The text message where Ed demanded that I sell the goats and the dog. and the dog is referred to as dog.
Okay. Is that exhibit number 6? Well, you can testify to it as well, Courtney.
Oh, okay.
So, if you would, just go ahead and tell the court what happened.
I was expressing concern about the imbalance of labor in the household, and that I was frequently exhausted and burned out, and I really needed a shift in responsibilities so that I had less on my plate. And I was told by Ed to sell the dog and the goats, and then I would have more time. And I said I would not sell the things that made me happy.
Kevin, which exhibit are we talking about?
In fact, she's just testifying to it. She's not referencing an exhibit.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you. And was there something else that you said? The dog and what else? Just that?
That was...
It actually cut out, so I didn't hear your answer.
That was the one I was thinking of off the top of my head. So I can't think of another one.
When we talk about the dog, I'm talking about Hazel. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes. I called it, in this case, the dog, because that is how Ed referred to Hazel in our communication, was dog or the dog.
Not by the name.
But her name is Hazel.
Okay.
Correct.
And, Judge, for the rest of them, if it's necessary in rebuttal, we'll bring them up.
Okay.
My time is...
Okay, yep. Just a few questions, if I could, just to clarify. In your stipulation you have on page 5, your student loans, your portion would be 35,000 and some odd change.
I think 355.
I have 30 plaintiff students loans, 35,000. Is that 350,000?
Yes.
Oh, sorry. So she's willing to keep the 350,000 but wants him to pay 54,000. Is that right?
That is correct. That is my understanding.
And that would, so there's about a total of 400,000? Okay. And the other question I have, a couple other questions. When you filed the complaint for divorce, Ms. Spalding, were you a resident of Washington County?
I was. I recently was moved out to Brandon, so I just moved to Rutland County. But immediately prior to that, I have been.
And is defendant a resident of Washington County?
He is, yes.
Okay. And how old are you, Ms. Spalding?
I'm 29, Your Honor.
And how old is the defendant?
I believe he's 47, Your Honor.
And he could tell me otherwise if he's not. And are you in good health?
Yes, Your Honor.
And is he in good health?
I can't speak to his health.
Okay. And where is Hazel? Is Hazel with you or is Hazel with him?
Hazel is with me.
And you're residing separately. I understand that. Any other questions? Any questions? Okay, I think that is it. Thank you, Ms. Spalding. So why don't we take a brief break? I know you wanted to review those 813A and B. Attorney Hill, so we'll give you a moment to do that. Okay, and then we'll come back here at 2:40 again. Okay, so we'll take a brief recess till 2:40.
All rise. Please
have a seat.
All right, Ms. Spalding, you remain under oath. And we'll get you back. There you go. And we'll get you back on screen, which we have you back. And Attorney Hill, are you ready? Do you have any questions? Yep, go ahead.
So I do have, I've given to Mr. Bowles a complete set of our exhibits. It might help you if I could approach and give you a complete set of our exhibits as they were filed last Friday. Would that help you?
Yes, that would be very helpful. We'll get it scared to the coordinator. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have an extra set?
Thank you.
Your Honor, we have a second set as well.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
And these are available in one complete set electronically. I can send them as a afterward if that would help.
Okay, thank you.
Odyssey was giving me challenges. So I know it's difficult to follow some of this, but we're doing it.
We're going to have to just kind of go through it exhibit by exhibit.
I understand.
Yeah.
And I think we can deal with it a lot thematically. They've seen these, so. But they saw them late, and that was my fault. And so,
All right.
I think I'm ready.
All right, if you're ready to cross-examine, this would be your time.
Good afternoon, Ms. Baldus. Or shall I call you Ms. Stearns at this point, would you prefer?
Either is fine, sir.
Your complaint in this action, do you remember approximately the date of your complaint? It's our first exhibit in this case. Let me see if I can express your question. Does it sound right that it was dated on or about November 20th, 2024?
It was, I believe, the 23rd, I believe. It was also a little after the 20th.
But November 2024, correct?
Correct.
When did you separate from Dr. Spaulding?
When?
Yes.
September 25th.
If it will refresh your recollection, you could look at page 3 of that same exhibit.
Well, if you know the answer, you've actually already testified to that.
Your exhibit 1, which you filed with the court here and swore under penalty of perjury, said that you separated March 25th, 2024. Is that correct? Does that sound correct?
That is not correct. It may have been an error on my part.
That to exhibit number 1, page 3 of it, please. This is defendant's exhibit number 1, page 3.
I see what you're referring to. That would be the 6-month date of separation. We separated on September 25th, 2024. There is a police report if you do want to look it up for when Ed asked me to leave.
That's not my question. And Mr. Bowles, later on, will be able to ask you his questions or questions you'd like him to ask. But right now, I'm asking you, does page 3 of your complaint say that you separated on March 25th, 2024?
Ed corrected that at the first case conference meeting with the judge, but that is what it says.
Your Honor, we're...
We both recognize...
I see what the complaint says. She already testified it's a mistake. I'm not quite sure what's the relevance of this. I understand that what she testified to is different than what the complaint made. I understand she did the math wrong. But why does this matter?
Because when she made the statement to the court in November of 2024, it was a false statement. I think that's relevant.
Okay, I don't know that it is, but I think you've got that in the record. She made a complaint. She got the wrong date. Clearly, she got the wrong date. There are 2 wrong dates on that complaint.
And could I proffer the reason why I think it's relevant?
Yes, please.
Because the parties need to have been separated under Vermont law and for policy reasons for at least 6 months before one files for a complaint.
I don't think you need to be separated. Are you trying to say that the complaint is void?
I'm not saying it's void. I'm asking simply whether this statement that she made under oath in November 2024 is accurate.
And she's testified it's not. And if your proffer is that you can't file a complaint until 6 months have passed, I don't think that's a correct statement of the law. I think I cannot issue a final divorce decree until 6 months have passed.
Your Honor,
but that's argument.
That wasn't my purpose.
Okay. All right. So please continue.
What was the nature of your marital relations in September 2024?
Objection, Judge. A tad vague.
Yeah, if you could just, I'm not quite sure what you mean by that either. So I'll sustain that. If you could just rephrase it.
Okay. Did you have sexual relations with Dr. Spaulding after March 2024?
Judge, I'm under the impression that we've established that that's an incorrect date. There's a subsequent date that corrected that. And whether they had sex on that date or not would be irrelevant because more than 6 months have passed. No.
I don't know that I found... Why is this relevant, if you would, Attorney Hill?
This is relevant to her credibility. We will proffer that this couple was intimate and expressing love toward each other and to third parties about each other within days of the separation.
Okay, so...
That doesn't make it illegal, but it does go to credibility, and we'll go to other issues as to credibility, too.
Okay, so you're not suggesting that they reconciled within the six-month period. You're simply suggesting that they had sexual relations and therefore much of what she said about the nature of the relationship is not true.
I have not suggested that. No, Your Honor, right. I'm not suggesting that the petition for the divorce is invalid. We're not opposing the divorce.
Okay.
What we're doing, the only things that are at issue here is the division of cost, debts, and the like, and Hazel. And that's been true since my first phone call.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think that's right. So your question was, were they intimate in what, March of 2024? Is that your question?
That was one question leading up to it. The truth is, my question is leading up to the fact that the weekend before they separated, they were expressing love intimately toward each other. I could read to you a text.
Okay, and so the relevance is because you're trying to undermine her testimony about the nature of the relationship, which from
Absolutely.
Her... Okay, that's fine. So you can ask that question.
If Dr. Spaulding had a text from you on September 19th, 2024, that said, I'm looking forward to a romantic weekend with you, doing things you like. We never do that. Does that sound like something you would have written 5 days before, 6 days before you moved out?
That does, but it is not sexual in nature.
You don't deny it. So you did not have sex after or close relations after you wrote this text?
I do not remember exact dates of when I was physically intimate with him. It's likely that it happened in between bouts of him throwing me out of the house.
Did you have a romantic weekend with him in the days before you and he separated?
If you're,
apart from the issue, and I'm not going to... My question isn't whether he threw you out of the house. My question is, this text, which refers to looking forward to a romantic weekend, did you have that romantic weekend between September 19th and September 25th?
I think romantic would be putting it incredibly mildly. Not mildly. That's not the word I'm looking for. It's incorrect. Did we have sex? Yes. Did I also need to make sure Ed got his medication? Did he also have to leave events early because he complained about not feeling well? Did I have to make sure that we did things that he needed to do? When I asked for my needs to be met, did he then lecture me and say I was taking time away from his things? Did it maintain all of the events and types of relationship dynamics that I described? Absolutely.
Your Honor, my
did
question
we have sex?
Did they have a romantic weekend away? Not.
I think her answer was no. Yeah. I think that's what the answer was.
It was not romantic.
Did you go out to dinner?
We went out for lunch.
Okay. You said you sold the goats for $5,000? Do you recall
Correct.
That? We can't hear you at this end. You might be muted.
Say it one more time, Ms. Baldwin. It didn't come through.
$5,500.
Okay, thank you. if I gather you and Dr. Spaulding are still somehow connected with Venmo. I'm not sure how these things work, but you are Venmo friends or something to that effect, or were at least for some period after your separation. Is that true?
Yeah.
So that he might see through Venmo, not through any sort of peering, but he might discover through Venmo notices your Venmo transactions. Does that sound possible?
I don't know how Venmo works.
If Dr. Spaulding were to testify that, in fact, you received roughly twice the amount for the goat sales, $10,200, would that be accurate?
That would be inaccurate.
You said you had good relations with Ed's family. Is that right?
I believe so.
If you know one of Edward's sisters-in-law, Annette Spaulding?
Yes.
Did you want to have children with Dr. Spaulding at any time?
We both agreed upon entering the relationship that we wanted children, and it was a top priority for us, yes.
And when did Dr. Spaulding go through medical efforts to try to accommodate both of your wishes to have children?
I believe he took some efforts.
You and he together went to seek fertility treatments, did you not?
I was asked to accompany him to his endocrinologist.
Yes or no? Did you go to him so the two of you would have more success conceiving?
Objection, Judge. I think it needs to be rephrased. It's a little bit confusing.
Yeah, it was a little confusing. Can you try it again?
I'll agree. It's confusing.
Yeah.
The evidence will show.
Well, just ask the question.
The two of them.
Just go ahead.
I'm responding to the objection. The evidence will show that the two of them went to
Just ask the question. So I'm going to sustain the objection. So just re-ask
Honor,
in a way that's not confusing.
If I were to ask her, did you have try significant efforts, she would, what we've
go
seen
ahead.
So far
go.
Is avoid the question.
I don't think so. Go ahead and try it again.
Did the two of you go to significant efforts to try to conceive a child?
We did not exhaust all of the options, but we did put in considerable effort.
He was trying, was he not?
I would not say he was.
He went on.
He had limited.
I'm sorry?
There was limited efforts outside of obtaining medication on conception of children.
Did he go several times with you, including two appointments in the August-September time period, during which you told the court earlier the two of you had long been separated? Did the two of you, during that period of alleged estrangement, go to doctors repeatedly to see if you could conceive a child together?
We weren't separated until September 25th, 2024.
That's what Dr. Spaulding will testify. That's true.
So prior to that, yes, we did.
2 months prior to that, and even 1 month prior to that, correct? The month prior to that.
The week that it happened. We were meeting with IVF, and Ed left the meeting and never came back. And
did you discuss
the meeting? Told me that the.
Okay. We'll go. Do you want to testify now as to why you believe or what Ed may have said for the reasons for his leaving the meeting? Because Dr. Spaulding will have a chance to testify about this as well. But if you want to give your side, you've raised it. Feel free.
But what's the proffer, Attorney Hill? Why is this relevant under the statutory factors?
The proffer is that these two were intimate,
okay.
And that her statement to this court about being more than 6 months estranged from each other, which is a good public policy reason. You don't want people getting into an argument and filing a month or two later. That's what Vermont statutes say.
Yeah.
She was aware of that because the complaint form says that. And so she knowingly, under penalty of perjury, told the court it had been more than 6 months. Where not only had it not been more than 6 months, they had been very positively intimate during that time, having romantic weekends, having sex, trying to have a baby together. There's an entirely different reason why she left. And yes, we do have evidence of that.
Okay. So if from my perspective, it matters if they were trying to have a child together after the period of separation. I understand the period of separation was September 2024, not March, as she said in her complaint, and she testified it was a mistake. It very well may be from March to September they were trying to have a baby. That's not relevant. What's relevant to me is whether after separation from September 2024, whether they tried to have a baby, because then the court may not have the jurisdiction to issue a final divorce decree. But that's not what I'm hearing her testify. Her testimony that I heard was that they were trying to have a baby up until a few weeks prior to separation in September 2024. So my question is, what does it matter? Like, why does it matter that...
We're going to get into a number of examples where she has given false testimony.
Well, I don't have...
And I believe that if a person says something has not been 2 months, but just a month or two beyond the statutory requirement for filing a complaint, I believe, I'm going to argue, that the circumstantial evidence is that it was a knowingly false statement, which goes to her credibility.
Boy, I don't know, Attorney Hill. I just don't see it. I don't want to spend my whole afternoon on this. So why don't you ask the question one more time, and then I'm going to ask you to move on. Okay, so ask the question, and then move on.
Did you discover that Dr. Spaulding was likely infertile within a month of your separation?
I found out that we would need to use IVF to conceive a child, but that Ed had genetic material capable of producing a child with assisted reproductive technologies.
If your sister-in-law, Annette Spaulding, were to testify that you said the reasons you were leaving was because you could not have a child with Dr. Spaulding, would she be telling a lie if she said you told her that?
Judge, I would object.
This is just not relevant. Is your objection relevant? Attorney Voltz, your objection is relevant?
Relevance.
Yeah. The issue for the court is the distribution of debt and the dog. That's really what I want you to focus on. The testimony I have is they couldn't have babies unless they were used IVF, which is fine. And then she separated a week, 2 weeks later. Unless you're trying to argue that that goes to merits, I don't see the relevance.
Well, we could ask the plaintiff and Mr. Voles, because an enormous portion of the direct examination had nothing to do with debts, but with the hardships that she alleged she had with Dr. Spaulding. I've heard the exact opposite story.
Well, maybe what we do is just hear that. And I will
have that opportunity.
Yeah.
Now I'm cross-examining the person who's at least 50% of her testimony she left because it was a difficult marriage. She talked about getting woken up in the middle of the night. She talked about...
So why don't you just ask the question? Did she separate because she couldn't have kids without IVF? Why don't you ask that question?
I did ask that question.
I'm not sure you did. So why don't you, if you want to ask that question, I'll give you the chance to do that.
Did you tell any third parties that the reason you were leaving Dr. Spaulding was because you could not have children with him other than through IVF because of his fertility issues? Yes or no? No?
No. What I said was I could not be blamed I could not maintain the level of work that I was doing. I could not continue to be yelled at. And I also was informed by Ed that the money for IVF was going to be reallocated to lawsuits instead of going into IVF. So we would need to wait because his priorities were different than mine, which is what I said to his sister-in-law. Those reasons.
That wasn't my question. My question was, did you say to his sister-in-law that the reason you were leaving, or a reason you were leaving, was because you couldn't have children with Ed?
I was able to have children with Ed via IVF, so I wouldn't say I couldn't have children with him. I didn't want to have children with him anymore based on his treatment. I believe I'm answering your question, sir.
Yeah, go ahead, Attorney. I would move on, please.
You testified earlier about his receiving nude photos from a friend. Do you recall that?
I do.
If Dr. Spaulding were to testify that this was a friend who had been a platonic friend of his for over 20 years and there were no nude photos, would he be telling a lie?
I couldn't tell you, but I believe the platonic would be incorrect considering I was informed by Ed that this woman was potentially somebody he was going to approach to have his children before me.
What did he say? You can
he said
here,
that this woman was looking
for party opponent. You're saying to the court that Ed told you that this person, whose name was Sharon, is that true?
Yes.
So your testimony, please give Ed's words, was that Ed told you that he intended to have children with Sharon?
He considered reproaching her when she was looking for a sperm donor because he thought it would be his last chance to have children. I would not consider that a platonic relationship, sir.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you again.
Mr. Hill,
what did Ed say to you about this? You can't guess what his mind was. The question is, what did he say to you, as best you can remember? And when did he say it to you?
He told me that Sharon sends nude pictures. It's her version of art. He told me on the day of our wedding, she asked if I would be open to a threesome. He told me that she needed praise after she had a double mastectomy so that she would still feel beautiful, and he was a longtime friend and should give it to her. And he told me that he was strongly considering having children with her, but she found a different sperm donor. I don't consider that relationship platonic.
During your marriage, before you were married, Ed had a job earning about $70,000 a year, did he not?
I don't know what he earned before.
Was it more than $50,000 a year?
I don't know what he earned before. I've never had access to Ed's finances.
Did you insist that he leave that job when you moved into his house?
I did not. I told him I could no longer stay while working 24/7 with a client because I was their day support and I took over Ed's night support care of said client. I worked with this client 24/7 and I told him that I would need to move out if this contract were to renew because it was too much all the time and I was getting no breaks. I offered to leave.
You offered to leave.
I was told too much. The money isn't paying for itself. I'm going to cancel the contract, which is what was told to the contract and the bosses, was that the client.
I'm sorry, which contract were you going to cancel?
I was going to find a new place to live so that I was not doing my job and Ed's.
Which contract?
With the client. It wasn't my contract. Ed said he would cancel the contract because the client wasn't paying for itself. He was going $15,000 in debt because of the food system that this client was doing.
In response
on top of the damages to the
In response to a question, you demanded Ed leave this $70,000 a year job. You said
my demand, my Ed
insisted,
not,
or you were
that he leave it.
Cancel the contract. Is that right? My question is, what did you mean by that?
No, that is not what I said. I never demanded Ed leave. I never demanded Ed leave his job. I said I would find other housing. He chose to cancel his own contract. I had no ability to cancel his job.
Please,
nor would I.
I'm sorry. Were you done? I didn't mean to cut you off.
I'm done, sir.
Okay. Turning to defendant's exhibit number 3. Do you have that in front of you?
I'm opening it now. Yes, I have it.
This is an email from you in 2022 to officials with UVM. Full disclosure, the official you were writing to was a neighbor of mine and a friend. So you were writing Beth Holtzman, and you told Ms. Holtzman, I am the owner of the farm. Does that sound right?
Yes.
Your farm is primarily a young woman and owned and operated, correct?
Correct.
Did you own the real estate under the, where the farm was?
No.
Did you own outright the goats? Or any of the equipment?
Yes.
You owned the goats. You alone.
Yes. They're registered animals. My name was the only one on the papers.
Please turn to Exhibit 11. Who wrote Exhibit 11?
Is this what says Northland Farm LLC business plan? Is that?
It's right after it. It is marked at the top, business plan. You're right. The business plan itself is Exhibit 10. This, it looks like it's in attack.
I just want to make sure we have the right, because our exhibits are a little bit, I just want to make sure I'm looking at the right thing. That's all.
I believe 11 is an attachment to 10.
Okay, so let's go ahead. I just want to make sure we have the right exhibit. And is it the one that says Courtney Stearns, 51% owner at Northland Farm LLC?
It goes to the truth of her statement.
I'm just trying to identify the right document, because we have more than one plaintiff's one and more than one plaintiff's two. So we've got numerous exhibits all under 1, 2, 3. Defendant should have been ABC, so we don't have this issue. But not. So what I'm just trying to do is make sure I'm looking at the right exhibit. That's all I'm trying to do. So is the exhibit that you're looking at titled Northland Farm LLC Business Plan Management and Organization, Courtney Stearns, 51% owner. Is that what we're looking at?
No. I'm looking at defendant's exhibit behind tab number 10, which is behind tab number 10 in the notebook before you.
Okay. Well, let me do that, because it's a little unclear what in the computer what we're looking at. So let me
this is what I have.
Yes, that's it. That's 11.
Right, so this is plaintiff exhibit 11 that we're looking at?
She is on the microphone. This is what she just read.
Which is the same thing as what I pulled up on the computer.
Yes.
It's the same
thing. Yeah, you have the right document. Yeah.
Okay. So, and I just want, so yes, we're all the same, so we have that.
Okay.
But Mr. Hill, I'm warning you, because it's 3:15, and my plan is to finish today. So I'm going to give you to like 3:25.
I understand, Your Honor. We are facing a number of new issues that arose only during Ms. Spaulding's direct examination. I don't think we're going to finish today.
Well, the plan is we are going to finish, because the only issue is I want to hear about the dog. I want to hear about the debt. I mean, what I would like to know is what are you asking for? And tell me what's relevant. Are you, first of all, let me just ask you. I don't mean to cut you off on your cross, but it's going to determine how much time I give you. Are you challenging the dog?
I'm challenging the statements that she said earlier that, first of all, that she owned the farm, and that after the separation, Dr. Spaulding incorrectly added himself as an owner.
But see, let me just tell you why it doesn't matter. I don't mean to cut you off. The reason, from my perspective, it doesn't matter is because she's not making a claim for the farm. So she's going to give them. She's the only thing that she's asking for that I think you should be focusing on. She's asking that he pay $54,000 of her student loan debt. So I think that's relevant. You can challenge that. She's also asking for the dog. Everything else she's giving to him. So I don't understand why we need to focus on that.
Our testimony will show that she owes half of roughly $200,000 or $230,000 to Dr. Spaulding. They did not live off of her loans other than for 1 year when Dr. Spaulding was on disability. They lived primarily off Dr. Spaulding and his mother, who's in the hallway, both of whom have been bankrupted by her.
So tell
me. They were taking not her money, but $500 a month from an 80-year-old woman who's still working to pay off debts that Ms. Spaulding was principally responsible for incurring. Our exhibits will show she was not a bystander on the container litigation.
I think that's relevant. I'm just not sure you're getting there through her cross, and it just simply may be more effective to get that under your testimony, get that, because you may have a whole different proposal that I need to hear.
I will try to tell you. We're going to rebut her statements that she was not involved in the container litigation. The exhibits we have given to the court and given to plaintiff shows that she was, if anything, the instigator of the container litigation with the town of Waitsfield. When we tried to settle it, and when Ed tried to settle it, she was long gone, resulting in attorney's fees and other costs.
So you're asking for debt that's associated with this?
Absolutely, we're asking.
Well, then I think we need to get it in through him. It's going to be certainly a lot more. If your argument is there's a whole bunch of debt out there that I have yet to hear about that you want her to be responsible for, then I think we really need to get that into your client.
We need to
get it into your client because we're not getting it into her.
I'll certainly get it into my client.
Let's get it into your client, and then I'll give you the opportunity. If we need more, I'll give you the opportunity to cross her, but it may be.
I'm so sorry.
I don't mean to talk over you, but you're telling me there's more issues than what's being proposed. What I understand that's being proposed is the dog, and she wants me to pay $54,000 of her $400,000 student loan debt. That's the only issues I have. She's willing to give him everything else. You're telling me that there's a whole lot of other debt that you want her to be responsible for.
Correct.
Let's hear from your client on that, because that is relevant, and the court will have to make a decision on that.
I think that sounds great.
Then let's go ahead.
Dr. Spaulding, or maybe better, his mother, who's done a better job. She's been more deeply involved in gathering the evidence on these debts. But Dr. Spaulding is certainly competent to testify as to the debts. So
okay,
we can call him and begin our direct examination.
Okay. So let me just make sure that Mr. Attorney Voltz has no other evidence. So Attorney Voltz?
No, nothing further, Judge.
Okay. Then let's go ahead and turn to you, Attorney Voltz.
I will want to at some point finish my cross-examination of Courtney, but she will be one of my witnesses as well.
Well, let's go ahead and start then. So we'll start with you. Why don't we hear from Dr. Voltz, Dr. Spaulding, and then we'll go from there. Okay, and if you need to call her or call his mother or anybody else, we can do that. We'll see how her time is. But do you plan on calling your client?
Okay, well, then I call Dr.
Okay,
Spaulding.
So let's do that. So Dr. Spaulding, come on up.
So, Judge, just to be clear, she's stepping down now?
Yeah, we're going to have her step down, Ms. Spaulding, and then we'll give her, if we need it, we'll allow further cross-examination. But I think it's going to be a lot more efficient if you just go right through Dr. Spaulding, Dr. Spaulding's testimony. So you remain under oath, and you may have a seat.
Hi, Dr. Spaulding. You understand you're under oath?
Yes, Attorney Hill.
Dr. Spaulding, we're going to get right into the debts. There are other issues to talk about, but let's get right now into the cost. So roughly since the time that you and Ms. Stearns separated, and in addition, if there were some court costs in the two court cases that where you were both joint defendants involved, how much have you paid or incurred as a debt from rough, including since September 24 and in the joint expenses before that?
I'm sorry, that was
to the best of your knowledge and belief.
Could you just state your name for the record?
Dr. Edward Charles Spalding.
Okay. So you can answer the question.
100% of the debt has been paid by myself, and I have actually had some contributions from my mother since we separated on September 25th, 2024.
Well, Ms. Spalding has said the farm was hers, and she supported it. Were there expenses during the marriage for the farm, such as the container that led to the litigation?
Yes.
Who paid those costs?
I paid for the container throughout the entire time the container was there.
Did you do it out of your money or?
Well, what container? If you could, there's container, references to this container. I don't know what you're referring to.
There are two other highly related pieces of litigation. They were both discussed at the April hearing, which, by the way, there were a lot of factual assertions made at that hearing.
Let's just talk about the container. I don't know what you're referring to. Is it like a barn? Okay. Is it a shed? Is it a bucket?
But certainly in tandem with the plaintiff, in order to run their farm and respond to a flood that occurred at their house, they rented first a 20-foot and then a 40-foot storage container.
Okay, let's go ahead and ask about that.
Looks like a shipping container.
Okay.
Whose idea, what was Ms. Spalding involved in the decision to bring the two shipping containers, first one and then a longer one, onto your property?
The first one, she was present. It was primarily my decision for the 20-foot, and then the 40-foot, we agreed that that would be able to accommodate the farm and the farm activities, and without it, we would not be able to run the farm. And that is stipulated in the variances that she submitted to both the town and the Department of Agriculture.
So it was your decision to help the farm in this way, and you paid for the container. Is that true?
That's correct. I paid for the removal fees and the shipping fee to drop it off and for the monthly fees.
Did Ms. Spalding use the container for her personal use as well as for the farm use?
Yes.
Did Ms. Spalding ever pay rent before you were married? She testified earlier, of course, that she supported you during the time you were together. Where did the two of you live?
We lived at 31 Center Faceton Road. It's physically located in Waitsfield.
On the farm. Down.
Yeah, it's our farm.
A one-acre farm.
One-acre farm. We made it happen.
And that farm is owned completely by you and your mother, correct?
Yes. Myself and my mother are the deed owners.
Did you ever ask Courtney to contribute to the financial costs, the mortgage, loans, utilities, things like that for the home while she lived there?
Utilities and, occasionally insurance and things of that nature. So just the usual upkeep. But there's no mortgage, and we never asked her to pay rent.
Taxes?
Occasionally, I asked her to chip in for taxes, but, only when it was necessary.
Roughly what percentage of the costs during the 6 years that you and she lived there and ran the farm there, and she worked from there, I gather, additional work and studied from there, roughly what percentage of the costs did she cover from her salary or her independent sources?
Over the 6 years, probably less than one-tenth.
Less than a tenth?
Yeah.
So her state, was there a year during your marriage where you were on disability?
I was applying for disability. My health has been problematic, to say the least, since I got long COVID.
You had long COVID?
Yes.
When was that roughly?
March 2020.
But other than that roughly 1 year period, just to the best of your knowledge, did you cover the majority of the joint expenses that you and Courtney had?
Oh, I covered the majority even that year. I had been working up until I got very sick. And
the
then,
car, the Toyota that is listed on her financial form, that is a vehicle that you bought before the marriage, correct?
That is correct. I purchased it before the marriage. She was actually very upset with me for purchasing it.
But that was before your marriage?
Yeah.
She didn't contribute anything toward that car?
No.
Did you have a job before your marriage?
I'm sorry, what car? I didn't, if you could
just... It's listed on the financial forms as a Toyota. There are two vehicles listed there. There's actually three. But this is an important one because the Toyota, she's letting Ed keep it, but it was never marital property to begin with. She contributed nothing toward it.
Well, it's still marital property. It's still marital property, regardless of who is titled it.
This is why I need a family lawyer in Vermont with me.
Yeah. So it's marital. But you can ask the question, does he want to keep the Toyota? That's a fair question. He bought it before the marriage. That's a factor the court will look at.
Yes, I need to keep the Toyota.
Did she contribute financially toward the Toyota?
Never.
Are you willing to give her the Honda?
Within reason.
Assuming other things can be worked out. At this point, you're saying she can have the Honda, correct?
That's the idea. I don't really need two cars.
Right. Okay. Did you help pay for the Honda?
Oh, yes, I did.
Roughly what percent of the Honda?
At least 50%.
Did you sign a loan for what?
Yeah, I co-signed the loan. I don't know why her parents wouldn't, but while she was hurt...
Please answer the question.
Yep.
Okay. All right. What was the original value of the car or the loan?
Around $21,000.
And that was roughly around what year?
She got a head injury, I want to say, in 2019.
Ms. Spaulding got a head injury?
Yeah, she had a traumatic brain injury.
Tell the court more about that.
She was rear-ended by another car going over 55 miles an hour in front of our home where she was turning left onto Center Faceton Road. I was the first responder on scene, and I held her head in traction until the EMTs arrived.
So she was a stranger to you at that point?
No.
Okay. But so you helped her. And then did you help her after that with regard to that injury?
Yes.
How did you help her after that?
She had a traumatic brain injury, and I was specializing in treatment of traumatic brain injuries at the time.
How much were you earning in income at that time?
Around $70,000. I was working three different jobs.
How much was she earning in income at that time?
She wasn't. She was hurt.
Okay. Before the accident?
She was, working with me at that point in time. She had been having problems with employment at the dairy farm she had been working at, so she decided to work with me in caretaking for the individual I had as a live-in person with disabilities.
How much was she earning before she met you and started working with you?
Maybe $16 an hour, maybe.
Roughly per year, what would you say?
Less than $20,000 per year. She didn't. The taxes reflect that.
Thank you. Did you have a romantic weekend with Ms. Stearns in September 2024?
Yes.
And did you have normal conjugal relations at that time?
Yeah. I rented an Airbnb so we could.
Were you hopeful that your marriage would work out?
Yeah, I was at that time.
Were you pursuing fertility treatments in an effort to achieve your joint goals, hers and yours, to have a child?
Yes.
Roughly when did you find out that those were not going to be successful without expensive IVF treatment?
Prior to September. Can't remember the exact date, but it was one, she was present.
Give or take a month, roughly when was it?
Yeah, probably a month or so prior. But she was present at the reproductive urology, not endocrinology appointment. She was there holding my hand.
So the two of you were trying to have children, and the two of you discovered in August or September of 2024 that you likely were going to be unsuccessful. Is that true?
We didn't have the money.
How much was the money?
Ridiculous. They were asking for $125,000 from Northeastern Reproductive Medicine.
We don't need details, but roughly $125,000?
Yes.
It was your understanding?
That was my understanding.
And the two of you didn't believe that you could have a child that way for financial reasons. Is that true?
It was impossible for what we were earning.
Do you believe that your lack of fertility with Ms. Spaulding may have been a factor in the reason she left you?
I know
it. Judge, speculation.
I'm going to overrule that. Can you answer?
I know it.
What did she say to you in response to the question I just asked? Because what did she say to you with regard to her reasons, or say to your family members? But you can't testify here as to what your family members said back, but what do you know that she said to your family members?
About? What was stated to me was that the main issue...
No. It's only... If I may. I agree with you.
if he didn't hear from her, then it's hearsay.
Yeah.
Right. You can only testify
sure.
about her words.
What was stated to me by Courtney was that our issue with me not being able to have children and about how it couldn't possibly be a high priority because of my health issue and because of the legal issues we were sustaining at that time, that was it.
Dr. Spaulding, I want you to turn to our exhibit, defendant's exhibit, number 12.
I don't have it in front of me.
Oh, you don't?
Man.
Yeah, we can use that book.
There's one right in front of you, Your Honor.
Yep. I'm going to hand it to you.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'm sorry, say again, which page?
Defendant 12.
You're going to do this from memory because you're familiar with these exhibits.
I am.
If I represented to you, the defendant's exhibit number 12 consists of plaintiff's emails to your then-attorney, Martin, regarding the development litigation, what's been referred to as the SHED, S-H-E-A, litigation.
That's correct.
Was Ms. Spaulding involved in the run-up to that litigation?
That's correct.
Are these true and accurate copies of emails written by Ms. Spaulding?
Yes.
Okay, please look at exhibit number 3. These are Ms. Spaulding's January 22 emails regarding arguments she was already having with the town of Plainfield.
Yes.
Is that a true and accurate copy of her emails?
Yes.
Okay. So when she testified earlier that these were really your lawsuits, she was an innocent bystander. Is that a true statement from her?
Absolutely not.
Thank you. How much have you roughly incurred in those two lawsuits over time? Amounts you've paid and amounts that you still owe. And then from memory, as best you can, give the court an idea of the magnitude of the expenses in those two lawsuits.
The financial expenses have probably been somewhere around north of $110,000.
And those were to two law firms, just for the developer case, that was for two law firms in sequence and for an engineering firm. Is that right?
And then there were the other expenses, but yes.
Did that help Ms. Spaulding to that litigation?
She demanded it. Our water was at stake, and there were animals on our farm that needed water, and she demanded we do something about it.
Did she help pay for those expenses?
A little bit, but not much.
When did she help pay for those expenses? Was it before or after the separation?
A little bit before.
Roughly how much?
Not much, just a few thousand dollars here and there.
Less than $5,000?
Yeah.
Okay. Did she help you, though, gathering facts and organizing arguments after she separated from you?
After? No.
Okay. Did you come to believe through Mr. Vole's statements or anybody else's that while you were litigating those cases, Courtney was having discussions with lawyers for the other side?
I'm certain she was. They said so.
So she communicated with the other side in your lawsuits, but not with you?
Yeah.
In the container litigation, did you settle that case?
Yeah, with your help.
After how many years of litigation did you settle it?
At least two.
You recall... No. Thank you. How much did you pay to settle that case?
$15,000 is what they did.
How much was the town trying to get or threatening to make you pay?
$152,000 in fines.
You settled it instead for $15,000, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Did you offer to let Courtney come in on your settlement for free?
Yes. I tried to hire a lawyer for the two of us even.
After you retained me, roughly when did you retain me to help you with that lawsuit?
I can't recall exactly. My mother was the one that found you.
So it was mid-April, sound right?
Sounds about right.
And your mother found me, right?
Yes.
So we settled it for $15,000, and then we offered Courtney to come in. Is that true?
That's correct.
Did she respond to that offer?
I can't recall off the top of my head.
Well, if she had responded, do you think you would remember it?
Yeah, I don't recall her responding.
Okay, thank you. Was she able to settle with the town?
Apparently so.
And how much did she, was she asked to pay by the town?
I believe that she paid zero.
In the Shea litigation, have you settled that?
I am trying to.
So can I just clarify before, you go on? When you say we settled this, I paid, so he paid $15,000. He didn't receive $15,000.
He committed to paying, he's paying $1,000 a month over the next 50, well, he's paid three already. These two lawsuits have bankrupted him and his mother.
I understand. I'm just trying to make sure I understand. So you're talking the container litigation, it was settled, and he has a $15,000 judgment against him. Is that right?
I'm so sorry?
He has a $15,000 judgment against him?
He does now. We negotiated a settlement in roughly the April-May time period that obligates him and his mother alone to pay $15,000, three of which he has paid in monthly installments of $1,000 each.
Okay, so there was a judgment against he and his mom.
So, on March 15th in this court, Mr. Voles told you that Courtney was certain she was going to be dismissed from that case. What we're trying to find out is, what were her discussions with the town? How could she settle it for zero when Mr. Spaulding had to pay $15,000?
Well, that would have been a great question on cross-examination. But
I haven't gotten to it yet. I will.
Okay, so we can reserve that question.
I'm going to ask also. She told us today for the first time that she has settled the Shea litigation. Our understanding is that for weeks, if not months, we have been waiting for her to participate in that settlement at no net cost to her. And she has not. Is that correct?
No. No, Ms. Attorney Hill, let's finish this.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Is that correct, Dr. Spaulding?
That's correct.
Has she made any demands on you before she would sign that case?
Yes.
What was the demand? Who made the demand if she wasn't talking to you? Who made the demand?
Her attorney, Jeffrey something, I guess.
What was the demand?
It felt like extortion. I can't recall the exact words.
Extortion is a legal term.
Yeah.
What was his
demand? This would be hearsay.
Yeah. So well, this would...
We will have documents.
No, I've read the document.
We've marked them as exhibits already.
I've read the document.
Well, why don't we move to introduce that document?
Exhibit 14. No. This is not, what's behind her is not the complete one, but you can see my cover emails from.
What exhibit
there may
looking
be
at?
Another one.
Where are we?
We'll have to provide you with, oh no, I'm sorry, it's exhibit 6, and so turn to exhibit 6, that's a better one.
Are these exhibits between the attorneys? Are these emails, Attorney Hill, between the attorneys?
These are attorneys between the attorneys that were forwarded to me because Courtney was in that case, through her counsel in that case, seeking to obtain statements from Dr. Spaulding that would have an effect in this case. So in Exhibit 14, I said, Jeffrey, please, if you're going
to
ask...
No objection as to what... I'm sorry.
Sorry.
Is this... to offer this as an exhibit? Is it being offered? Number 6?
We're still only partly way through our examination.
Well, hold on. Let's just...
I'm going to offer all of these exhibits into evidence.
Mr. Hill, look at me. Let's do it one at a time.
Okay.
Okay. Are you offering Exhibit 6?
Yes, I offer Exhibit 6 in that.
And if I understand, this is from Attorney Gervin to Chandler in USC, in Attorney Hill's copy on.
Who's Chandler?
It's a hearsay.
Yeah. Why is this not hearsay, Attorney Hill?
I'm asking my client to use this to better his understanding as to what is being asked of him and by plaintiff before plaintiff will settle the case that has cost my client so much money.
Okay, but this document is all hearsay. So how would I get this admitted? Do you have a hearsay exception? What is the exception?
These are statements of a party opponent through her attorney.
So you're arguing that this is an agent. It's an agency argument.
It's absolutely an agency argument, and therefore it's an 801D2 argument. This is a statement of a party opponent. Well, also, every one of Mr. Voles' statements to this court, where he represented facts that were known to plaintiff, are also statements of a party opponent. Today,
well, they were in fact statements.
That's
right. They were admissions against a party opponent. But this is a different argument.
Admissions against these are statements of a party opponent.
Well, how is that?
Because Courtney is a party in this case.
But these are not statements by Courtney.
They are statements by her through her agent. You're right.
Well, who is her agent?
Jeffrey Guevin.
Okay, so you're trying to argue that the statements by Mr. Guevin can come in as an admission by a party opponent because he was acting as her agent. Is that correct?
I wouldn't call it an admission. I would call it simply a statement. What she is doing in the Shea litigation and how it is increasing costs today for Dr. Spaulding.
Okay, so I would call it an admission by a party opponent through an agent. So you're looking to admit the text from Mr. Guevin, then?
I'm looking to introduce Exhibit 6 as exchanges, yes, by Mr. Guevin.
Okay, Attorney Voles, understanding that's the argument.
Judge, there's probably 13 pages here. Which of these are we trying to get? All of these in, because they're all different. We have statements by Attorney Chandler.
I mean, I could certainly move. I would exclude Chandler. Mattson is who?
He is Dr. Spaulding's attorney.
Okay, so those would not come in, but I could get the statements by Mr. Guevin, Attorney Guevin, if your representation is that's Ms. Spaulding's attorney. Is
correct.
That?
I don't need Chandler's statements in it. I'm simply putting this in to help Dr. Spaulding answer what's going on in terms of plaintiff increasing the costs to defendant in the Shea litigation.
Okay.
So
you're moving to admit then Mr. Guevin's, Attorney Guevin's emails. Statements. Attorney Voles, any objection?
Not just if it's simply Mr. and it's actually Gavin.
Gavin, thank you.
Anybody would think. Attorney Gavin's remark in his representative capacity as an agent.
Okay,
heard testimony that he is her attorney. I'm open to hearing that testimony, but I don't know this for a fact. I'm not involved in that litigation in any respect.
Okay. So I'll introduce. I'll admit the exhibit in part, so that Attorney Gavin's statements as a representative of Ms. Spaulding will be coming in.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You. The attachment is really what's most important because it shows. We get Dr. Spaulding to say something about the marital property in this case, or not say something.
What? So you can keep going with it.
What is it that's the most important part of this?
Okay, the last two pages of Exhibit 6 is what Mr. Gavin is discussing in his emails. That's what plaintiff is discussing in the emails.
Okay, so I don't know that this is attached to the emails and it's unsigned. So I don't know. I would object to them on that basis.
to your knowledge, has that case, apart from anything you heard from Ms. Stern today, is the Shea litigation still ongoing?
To my knowledge, yes.
Has she signed it yet?
No, not to my knowledge.
Why has she not signed it? Has she or Mr. Gavin given you any reason as to why she hasn't signed it?
My understanding is she wants me to sign this amendment to the settlement agreement, or addendum to the settlement agreement, prior to her signing anything.
Okay, thank you. And looking also at Defendant's Exhibit number 12, which is plaintiff's emails that pertain to that litigation. So is it your testimony that plaintiff was very much involved, if not the instigator, of the litigation in that case?
Yeah.
And these are true and accurate copies of her emails?
Yes.
But she hasn't helped you even today to settle what are ongoing legal costs, correct?
No.
How much money do you have left to pay, or your mother have left, to pay these ongoing legal costs?
After basic bills, none. We have to borrow money.
Well, I do hope that the testimony we heard earlier today, which is that she has now signed the settlement agreement, is true. We'll find out after this hearing. Where, to your knowledge, does plaintiff live right now?
I don't really know for certain.
Where do you believe she's living? And what are the reasons you have for believing?
She's allegedly renting property at $680 a month. If you go by where that money is being taken out of, according to the discovery she submitted, then that means she's renting from Christy, who is in attendance here.
So from your memory, from the discovery that was served, discovery responses that was given to you, she's paying, well, on December 20th of 2024, she paid $680 to a person named Christy Koch.
Koch. Yes, thank you, Christy. She's here in attendance.
Oh.
Yes, she's drinking for me.
Oh, this is Ms. Koch in the courtroom with us. This is helpful. So does Courtney live in Alabama?
If the payment that she's renting from Ms. Koch is correct, then yes, that would be the property in Alabama that she said she purchased through.
How many months of statements did you see of months of rent in Alabama?
Starting in December and then from there on, so several.
Did you look at her credit card statements also? I noticed that some of them in the financial statements are redacted. The stuff is blacked out.
Yes, yeah, stuff is redacted.
If you look through that...
It's not redacted very well. You can read through the ink.
Where were these charges? Let's look at this one. It's December. Where were they incurred?
Alabama.
Alabama.
Yeah.
So to your knowledge, has she primarily lived in Alabama since roughly December 2024?
According to those records?
To your knowledge?
Sure. To my knowledge, I don't know.
Does she live in Alabama right now, primarily?
I mean, I don't know, but according to those records, I guess she's spending a lot of time down there.
The circumstantial evidence to you is that the majority of her time since December was in Alabama.
That seems to be what her bank records indicate that she submitted.
Has she tried to buy property in Alabama?
Oh, yeah. She was trying to buy property just prior to our separation.
Did she ask you or your mother for money to help her buy property in Alabama?
Of course. She'd been asking for financial contributions from myself and my mother to buy property for literally several years, at least 2 years.
So she moved to Alabama with an intent to remain there, to your knowledge?
To my knowledge, yes. That's indicated by text from her.
Your Honor, we could ask her now if she has changed her residence. She testified earlier that she is living in Brandon. Mr. Voles testified that she couldn't be here today because she is physically afraid.
Well, she can move to Alabama so long as...
We could find out today.
But why don't we ask the question, does she reside in Washington County?
I was only doing it as an efficiency of time because we have everybody here.
Why don't you ask that question, does he reside in Washington County?
He has done his best to answer that, and to the best of his knowledge, he doesn't. He's already said, to the best of his knowledge, she resides in Alabama.
What county does he reside in?
My home address is in Waitsfield, Vermont.
What county?
It's in Washington County.
Okay, so that's so long as one of them is in Washington County, we're in the right court.
I believe that's right, Your Honor.
Yeah.
We're not contesting venue. We're not contesting whether or not the petition for separation is valid. I'm bringing up these points because we're seeing that statements are routinely being made that are demonstrably, knowingly false.
So what's the issue of her being in Alabama?
Well, one issue is she told you incorrectly that she lives in Brandon. That's one issue. Another issue is that in an unsworn statement, Mr. Voles told you that she couldn't be here today.
Okay, so your point is
not
that
because she's in Alabama, but because she fears for her safety from my client.
Okay. Yep.
I've seen no evidence of that. It is a disturbing statement, and it's highly relevant in a claim for my client's and his mother's money.
Okay. I'm not sure aware of any claim for money by her. I understand what you're trying to. You're trying to make a statement that she testified that she lives in Brandon, and you believe he believes she lives in Alabama, and therefore she lied, and that goes to her credibility. I understand that argument, right? Is that your argument?
That's part of my argument.
Okay.
What the evidence here shows is that although she has from the start made no claim or contribution to the marital home, as recently as April in this case, Mr. Voles said she was making a claim on the marital home against Ed and his mother.
But that's not what's before the court.
It's highly before the court because, if she's looking for an offset, I'll give you the home, but you got to pay part of my student loans. We agree. We're done. But that's not what I've heard emphatically. In fact, Courtney, 2 or 3 days ago, asked Ed to promise he won't use the fact that in this case over here, she said, I have no interest in that home, never have. But don't use that fact over here. We'll have, according to Courtney's two lawyers, we'll have alternative facts. Same person, two sets of facts.
Okay.
And that's
Mr. Voles,
impossible.
Is she making a claim for the home?
Never. In fact, the only conversation that I had about the home, Dr. Spaulding and I have not spoken directly. We've emailed. But when Attorney Hill entered the case, before we even set the proposal on the stage, I just want to let you know she has no interest in the marital home. It's all going to center on debt and the dog.
Okay. So let's move on.
Absolutely right. I just want to make sure that any pretextual claim for the home is not used as an offset for the debt.
That's not the argument.
Okay. She's claimed that she incurred over $300,000 in student debt while you were living together, and that you lived off of that. You told us earlier that less than 10% of the joint expenses were coming from her, whether it's from the loan or her other income during those years. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So do you think she has any valid claim at all to ask you for a nickel to help her repay the loan?
In fact, she used to borrow money from me to pay for her residency expenses, which was often including airfare, Airbnbs, and all these other costs for these residencies. Her residencies were based in California and Washington State and Ohio, and I incurred those debts, and then she would pay me back.
So you supported her in her graduate degree?
Okay. Through both of her graduate degrees.
All right.
The prior one and the one she's currently working on.
Now, after she moved in with you and gave up her prior method of employment, she started seeing patients as a psychologist of some sort, whether she had a master's or what, correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Did she develop clients?
Yes.
What was the LLC or other company she used to develop those clients?
It wasn't an LLC. It was she was working with my nonprofit that I created in 2009 called Northland Adventure Education Therapy Center because she could not find an internship that would accept her anywhere else.
And that was the entity she referred to below, that she was an intern in your nonprofit.
That's correct. And I created the internship for her.
And she brought her counseling clients into that nonprofit.
I helped her recruit them. I also helped her recruit
them. Did you also have clients, counseling clients in that nonprofit?
Yes, I still do.
Did you have a supervisor in that nonprofit?
We hired a billing supervisor named Christian Diamond, who was also her marriage and family therapy counselor and supervisor.
And was Dr. Diamond the supervisor of both of you?
Yeah, he helped with the billing for mine. I had separate licensing supervisors because I'm a separate license.
Roughly how many clients were there or are there now of that business, to your knowledge?
I cannot disclose that fact. That would be a violation of HIPAA.
Okay. Well, in plaintiff's final exhibit, she gave some numbers in terms of how much money she earned for the first 6 months of this year. Do you recall that?
Yes.
And roughly how much money did she earn during the first half of this year alone?
I can't recall from her financials.
According to plaintiff's exhibit number 14, if you look at the top right corner of page 2, it's $23,423.
This sounds right.
Okay, so a little over $23,000, roughly $23,500 per 6 months.
Yeah.
All right. So that's about $46,000 or $47,000 in a year.
Yes.
That's her business, but it started as your business.
Yes. Yeah.
Are you getting any of that? Are you able to use Dr. Diamond as your supervisor now?
No, it became a conflict of interest since he was her licensing supervisor.
So she walked away with the business
of the
you
divorce.
Started, and she walked away with your joint supervisor. Is
yes.
that true?
Yes.
Okay, let's talk about the farm then, LLC, you started.
Yes.
And we saw that you were a 49% owner of that, promised to be a 49% owner of that from the start, correct?
I was promised
let's
that in 2019 and 2021.
Exhibit, which was, it was implied earlier, that perhaps you had, without her knowledge, changed the ownership of Northland Farms. Did you change, or did you intentionally change, who was the owner, or who owned how much of Northland Farm when you filed Plaintiff's Exhibit 11 with the Secretary of State?
I added myself as a member because I thought as an agent I already was, and I knew she intended to take away my contribution to the farm.
What is a member?
An amendment.
If you don't know,
yeah.
Under Vermont law,
yeah.
When you add yourself as a member of something, does that make you a 50% owner, a 1% owner? Does it change anything with regard to ownership, to your knowledge? And if you don't know, you don't have to say, but to your knowledge.
I wanted to make sure that I was not cheated out of my share of ownership of the farm.
So you feared that she was going to take the farm and cut you out of it completely, correct?
Absolutely.
Did you ever ask her to change the ownership from 49% 51?
No, I never asked her to change the ownership. It's always been 51 and 49% since 2019 when we started.
Did you ever ask the Secretary of State to change your percentage of ownership?
No.
Did Courtney ever say she thought you had tried to steal 49% of the company from
Yes, she claimed 100% of ownership on her original 813A and 813Bs.
Did you ever see Plaintiff's Exhibit 11 or discuss it with Courtney before it was produced as an exhibit a few business days ago?
I think I only have the defendant. I don't have the plaintiff's ones in front of me.
I think you saw it this morning. May I approach you?
Yeah.
Yeah, you may.
You can hand me one of the notebooks. There's a plaintiff one right there.
Turn to Exhibit 11.
Please. Yes. Thank you, sir. What was the question again?
When you filed that document, you testified you didn't have any intent of changing the percent ownership at all.
No. I listed on my 813s that she is 51% owner and I am 49% owner per the business plan that we agreed to in 2019.
So whether it may have changed it or not, that's a legal question. You had no intention of changing the ownership.
No. It is the same ownership.
It's showing your ownership,
yep.
Correct?
Yep.
Okay. Did plaintiff ever call you up and say, hey, why'd you file this in?
No.
So the first time you saw it was when it was shown to us in a pack of exhibits the other day, and the first time you heard her talk about it was today.
First time I heard her talk about this was today, the 100% ownership that she was claiming incorrectly was on her 813s.
Now, plaintiff testified that you lived off of her. You've testified that's not true. Did she borrow money from your brother and sister-in-law?
Yes, we did.
That's defendant's exhibit number 15, that's a statement of your brother-in-law, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, I understand that that's hearsay, but you've read that statement.
Yes.
That statement true and correct to the best of your knowledge and belief?
Oh, absolutely.
So this was a $14,000 loan that you and Courtney together went to, irrespective of the statement, to your brother and your sister-in-law so that you could fund joint expenses. True?
$14,080.
Okay. And did she agree that she would repay your brother and sister-in-law?
She was on the phone with me negotiating it the whole time.
Just a yes or no?
She was there, present in the room, and agreed to it.
Has she paid any part of it?
No.
Has she promised to pay any part of it?
She is not promising to pay anything these days.
Did she seek financial support from anybody else in your family?
My family, my mother, my brother, and my sister-in-law, anybody that had money. And we even approached her Aunt Christy to help with paying for things. She offered $30,000 to help pay for a home. But that was it. I asked her if she would talk to her parents about borrowing money. She never did.
How much money did she take with you from your mother? How much did she live off of in gifts from your mother?
My mother sent about $500 every other month when we were in our water crisis time and all the money was gone.
So when she said you were living primarily off of her student loans, in fact, you weren't living off her student loans. You were living off your greater income and loans or gifts from your parents.
Her student loans are all spent in advance on her education and her residency trips, and she borrowed money from me in advance to pay for those.
Okay, we don't have much time, Dr. Spaulding. You heard a lot of statements by Courtney this morning. We don't have time to address them all, but are there some that you want to make sure the court knows today require a rebuttal in fairness to the court so the court is not misled?
There was a lot of false statements made today.
Can you give one or two examples? Briefly, from 60,000 feet.
How she characterized the marriage. How she characterized my relationship with our dog, Hazel. How she characterized my achievements and my contributions to the relationship, the marriage, and the family, and the home.
Let's look at Exhibit 8, please. Dr. Spaulding, this is your mother's statement, who's here today and could testify to it and has sworn under penalty of perjury. That's right, as has your brother-in-law. She talked about your marriage, and specifically in the 8, she talked about Hazel. So please look at Exhibit 8.
Is this Defendant's 8 or Plaintiff's 8?
Defendant's 8. I'm so sorry.
Yes.
Your mother testified that after a couple of years, Courtney appeared to lose interest in Adora, her dog.
If I may just interrupt, I apologize. I'm looking at Defendant's 8, and it's our request to appear remotely.
You're in 7. 8 is, I don't know why that's it. I don't know why that's, are you in Plaintiff's 8?
No, Plaintiff's 8, you said it was in Defendant's 8.
I have no idea, but this is it.
All right, that's fine.
Why don't we just have them testify about his possession of the dog?
Well, because his mother was really quite specific.
Okay. Let's just
but it's a third party. But why don't you read that and say, is that all?
Okay. Yes, that's all.
You're absolutely right. Talk about Plaintiff's care of Hazel and your care of Hazel and other statements that are relevant to where it is in Hazel's best interest and the relative merits as between you and Plaintiff. Because your mother testified that.
Just ask about Hazel, and we'll hear his position.
Okay. Yes. Thank you.
Hazel, we got her from my aunt, Helen, who lives in Maryland, and she was very adamant that we get one of the puppies that she was raising for, they're English shepherds. We were caring for my aging dog, Ella, who was a certified therapy dog with Vermont therapy dogs, and she was dying of cancer, and it was too much, and we didn't have the time or the space or energy or money to take care of another dog. But when Ella passed, we opened our home up to Hazel. And we were both very excited to get her. But Courtney took lead on a lot of it because of her background in being a dog trainer and being obsessed with dogs. She used to read dog canine catalogs as a child, and she worked with a breeder for one of the top breeders for corgis at one point. So I let her take lead on it all because it mattered more to her. It was more important to her. But when we got Hazel, I bonded with her very quickly. She used to snuggle up with my pajamas and drag them around the house so she could have my scent next to her. And
your mother testified about a dog named Adora, whom Courtney wanted, and you drove to Tennessee to get that dog.
We drove all the way to Tennessee to pick up a pair of poodles. One was for my brother, and one was for her. The idea of the poodle is these poodles had some talent for working with traumatic brain injuries, and the idea is if they can work with a service dog with
just,
a TBI.
Just briefly, yeah. Your mother testified that after a couple of years, Courtney appeared, appeared to lose interest in Adora. She will be here to testify later on.
We'll see if we need her, because okay. I can be hard-pressed to set this over to hear about her dog, okay?
Exhibit A, these statements from your mother, do they sound accurate?
Absolutely.
Specifically, the statements about plaintiff losing interest in Adora.
She was really cruel to that dog in the end.
Okay, so I'm not admitting it. That is a hearsay document, and there was an objection to it. But I understand that his testimony is that Miss Balding was not appropriate with another dog they had. Right?
Wasn't appropriate with Hazel either, and she's worried about Hazel's. So our settlement offer in this case written is, look, we're fine with a veterinarian looking at Hazel, make sure she's healthy and okay now. The veterinarian would see Hazel interact for 20 minutes with Dr. Spaulding and with plaintiff, and whatever the veterinarian says at the end of that brief visit, independent visits, the veterinarian's decision will be binding. No litigation.
Okay, but
I can't imagine why we can't agree on that fact or on that proposal, and then we're only talking about money.
Okay, so
but
just to be...
heard no response to that settlement offer.
Okay. And I understand that Hazel's been with Miss Balding since September 2024, is that right, Mr. Spaulding?
Not by choice.
No, I understand, but I'm just trying to clarify where Hazel is.
She's allegedly in her possession.
And has been in her possession since?
I do not know that for certain. I've not seen my dog since that last day.
Okay, and that's my question. So when's the last time you saw Hazel?
Last time I saw Hazel was the 25th of September 2024.
And how old is Hazel?
She's just about 2 years now.
Okay. All right. Thank you. All right. Anything further?
Not on Hazel, no, Your Honor.
Okay.
I think this entire case can be settled. We have tried to, since July 8th.
But here we are, so let's finish up the testimony. Well, do you have any further questions for you?
In April, you were told that mediation would be inappropriate.
Do you have any? I'm trying to finish this case by today, and it's already 4:09. So my question for you is, do you have any further testimony of this client?
I do. I have a great deal of additional testimony of his.
What would the testimony be of?
It will be on other costs that are relevant and that should be divided. It will be, let's see if I can get, we have probably 15 categories of costs. And documents behind all of them. So I don't think we can get through it in even several more hours.
Give me a proffer of what you think she should be. It's just you're saying that there's marital debt. What marital debt are you suggesting is out there that needs to be divided?
It's roughly $235,000.
She
should pay half of it, but we have offered in writing.
Just tell me what the debt is that you're asking for. Tell me, you've said it's $235,000. Is this all associated with the litigation that's pending?
Going down the list, the container litigation with the town, the Shea litigation, the developers, the loan from the family, that's $14,000. She took all the money from their joint account and spent it, despite your December order that parties not do that. She bought a $90,000 house in part using marital property, despite your December 24 order that she not do it. Credit card debt, that totals up to about $20,000.
Was the credit card debt in his name or the joint name?
They were joint accounts where she had a card of her own. She also, I want to put on record, had her own Discover card the entire length of the marriage, which she used for Spotify. She was on my joint accounts, and then she canceled them the day she left.
But you paid and now owe roughly 20, since the time of the separation.
I got left holding the bag. Yes.
If I could repeat the question.
Yep.
Sorry. Since the time of the separation, you've paid or incurred roughly $20,000 in credit card debt that is properly joint, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
But hold on. How could that work? Hold on. Let me. You said, I understood it. She was on his credit card in September 2024 and closed the account. And then since then, you're saying there's additional debt he's seeking.
No, that debt is from before the separation. That's credit card debt from before the separation.
That you was listed in your name, but you're saying she's part of these were her.
Yes,
her
those are credit card debt that we transferred to with a balance transfer onto two different cards. They covered living expenses and other expenses such as her travel for her residencies and things of that nature. Yes.
And you paid that debt by yourself?
I've been paying that debt by myself since the separation.
The Honda, you thought it might be worth around $18,000. She has said it might be worth only $10,000 or $11,000, but somewhere in that ballpark,
yeah.
That's a joint marital property.
That was correct? A joint marital asset. We both used it.
Okay, other categories is she walked away from a $5,000 deposit on a house in New York or some property in New York that she had asked you during the marriage to help contribute toward.
Yes.
Correct?
Yes.
So adding, and then there's a Dr. Cheney, and there's the goat sales of $10,200. Adding everything together, just of the things that are sort of hard currency, it's $186,000, correct?
Yes.
Additional expenses are damage to your house. And we have a new appraisal which will show the house before and after Courtney is worth at least $100,000 less, the house and property. We could add those things. There's a camper destroyed. There's $108,000 of fair market value rent. You've never asked her for rent. Of course you wouldn't. But that's something you gave to her while she was claiming she owned your farm and ran it by herself while you were the person who was renting the container and buying the materials. All right. In addition,
are you asking for, I'm sorry, so you're asking for rent for the time she lived there?
We're asking for half of 186 paid over 5 years with the first year forgiven.
What is that rent?
I have asked for is in writing, what we've tried to do is settle and said, look, you need to talk with Charlene and Ed, or at least
what is $186,000? Are you saying that's payments that she's responsible for as her portion of the rent when she was living in the home?
No, I misunderstood that.
Go ahead. What is that money that you're asking for?
The few things I've mentioned most recently were factors addressing why $186,000 is more than fair.
What is $186,000? What is that?
The $186,000 is for the container litigation, the developer litigation, loans from the brother, funds taken out of the joint account, credit card payments, the Honda taken by her, the penalty that Dr. Spaulding incurred for the early withdrawal, he depleted his entire IRA account, EMDR counseling, waiver of deposit on New York House, a Dr. Cheney, and goat sales. Those all total up to $186,740. To show that half of that is more than fair, only to show that, we did get into another over $150,000 of other things that where she financially benefited during the marriage. And we're not asking that for settlement purposes. For settlement purposes, we have said, the vet decides Hazel, she takes half of these hard currency and otherwise very relevant costs, but we let her pay it in five equal increments with the first year, no payments at all, to let her get on her feet in Alabama or elsewhere.
Mr. Vils, does she own property in Alabama?
I'm not that I'm aware of, Judge. We can ask.
But let me ask.
I certainly have never heard.
Ms. Spalding, you remain under oath. Do you own any property in Alabama?
I do not, Your Honor. I do not own any property anywhere.
All right.
Dr. Spalding, do you believe that she may have purchased or tried to purchase property in Alabama?
I know for a fact that she tried to purchase property in Alabama. She approached her Aunt Christy to get the $30,000 that she had promised us as part of what was supposed to be her inheritance that she was going to use for the New York house originally, where we had a deposit placed on that property, and we were attempting to secure the loans. And then I know for a fact that that property was purchased.
But to your knowledge, she hasn't. You do know that it was purchased.
Oh, I know it was purchased.
Go ahead, have a seat, sir. We're all set. Look, have a seat. We're not going to be able to finish this today, so go ahead. You can have a seat. We're not going to finish it. So you can have a seat, sir. Just watch your step, okay? Can you find me another hour? All right. So we're not clearly going to. A lot of the things that you're asking, Mr. Hill, it's kind of hard for me to fathom that, honestly, in a four-year marriage, but. But we're not going to finish it today. So we're going to have to set it over for another hour. I'm going to give you an hour. Mr. Volz, have you heard of any of these demands that they're looking for?
I know that earlier this week, last week, I got a flurry of emails, not all of which that I read, honestly, because my client was not interested in hearing anything from Mr. Spalding.
Yeah.
So I'm not aware of these. That's all I can say. But if they were in an email that was sent to me, I got emails about the exhibits, they'd be late, continue the hearing, and so forth, which is all their right to do. But at this point, I just started to read what was written, and I just knew out of hand she's not interested in this stuff.
Yeah. So this is, I want you to give me a proposal, and I want you to attach to your proposal the non-hearsay evidence to support your request, okay? So if you're asking for part of the loan, you know, so for example, she says she wants the Honda and he wants the Toyota. He's asking for, I think he's asking for her part of the car. EMDR counseling. Is he asking that she pay for part of his counseling?
For half, well, you could ask him, we haven't finished our case or even gotten halfway through it. So I don't know how we can exclude hearsay when I haven't had an opportunity to bring in a witness who's in the hallway.
What would they testify to?
Well, she would testify as to the truth. The person who's in the hallway would testify as to the truth of Exhibits 8 and Exhibit 9, which are hearsay right now.
What was the proffer? What would she testify to? What are you trying to get into evidence?
Okay, in 8, she is saying Hazel should go with Dr. Spalding. In 9, she is saying that plaintiff did not contribute. Well, that Edward was not abusive at all, that these were false statements, false allegations, and that Courtney has no claim at all on the house. She agreed to that.
She's not. There's no claim for the house.
You're right. That's new information to us today.
Okay, so I don't need testimony on that because there's no claim for the house. I don't need testimony on that because there's no claim for the house. This is what I like to do. I want you to give me your proposal. I've already got your proposal, Attorney Volz, so I've got your proposal. I want you to submit your proposal and any evidence you have to support it, okay? Because a lot of this may be, that way you can just submit it all at once, and then you've got argument, and then we don't have to go through all the evidence. A lot of what you're asking, well, from my perspective, this case is really simple, and you're trying to make it more and more complicated. And the reason why you're trying to make it more and more complicated is you're trying to get more and more money out of her for things that you can have a claim for. I mean, all debt is marital, so you can make a claim for it. So if you want to have a claim for that she's responsible for half of this cost of EMDR counseling, put that in a proposal. Give me your supporting documentation of how much that costs. If you're looking for part of the Honda, tell me what it is that you're looking for part of the Honda. You're looking for half the value of the Honda. I have no valuation of that Honda. I need to have supporting evidence. If you're looking for $90,000 for a home she bought, we've got testimony she didn't buy a home, so that presumably will be taken out of the equation. If you're looking for money from a joint account that she spent, give me a statement from the joint account. And when it was, so if you think here's the joint account from this account in September of 2024, this is how much was in it, and then this is how much you had in maybe October of 2024, to demonstrate that she took this money. So you'll have an argument. So I want to know what your argument is, and I want the supporting documentation. Can you do that?
I will do my best to do that, but plaintiff and Mr. Bowles are the people who put in evidence who contributed how much during the marriage.
So let me just tell you what I'm inclined to do. I'm inclined to give your client everything. So he can get the business, he can get the home, he can get the farm. She keeps her business, whatever that is.
Does she keep her student debt as well?
That is an issue. I mean, you're giving me this whole long list of debt. I can tell you where I'm leaning towards, which is that she gets all of her debt and you get all of your debt.
It would grossly simplify things if Mr. Bowles would say today, yes, we waive any claim on Edward having to contribute.
And that would mean
any statements that she made in terms of what the marriage was like and that being any factor at all in how much Dr. Spaulding should owe or give to her. We can strike 40% of her testimony.
No, I'm not striking anything. So that's what I want. You folks can still keep trying to settle. If you can do it, that's up to you. But we're going to come back here September 3rd at 9 o'clock for 1 hour, September 3rd at 9 o'clock. That'll be to finish the defendant's case.
I'm sorry, what date?
September 3rd at 9 o'clock. And I want from the defendant, I want a written proposal, and I want exhibits attached to each proposal. And that may simplify quite a bit. Okay?
A related issue that Dr. Spaulding has pointed out to me is that he, too, has a substantial student debt, and he may seek contribution from plaintiff to help pay.
Well, then you need to put that in your proposal and any supporting document. Supporting documentation to support your request. Okay? Any questions, Attorney Volz? Any questions from you?
I don't, Judge.
Thank any questions from you, Attorney Hill?
Can my client appear remotely again?
She may.
Thank you.
Okay? All right, we're all set for today. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.